This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
So Elon Musk tries to buy Twitter, right? And he offers up this legitimate offer, $54.20 per share to buy everybody out. Instead of going to the shareholders, the board announces what's called a poison pill, which basically bars Elon Musk from buying up the company through public means. They may still entertain his offer, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And it looks like we are about to see one of the biggest culture war battles, the most significant we've ever seen. I think Elon Musk has exposed so much dirty dealing, and it says a lot about how wealthy billionaires, corporate interests are manipulating the public and don't care about money because they're getting money from the Fed. They don't care about the cost. They want the power and the influence. Even Recode, a Vox.com blog, says exactly this, that Twitter is where journalists and politicians get out their message. Well, surprise, surprise, guess who is getting banned? Yeah, it's mostly the right. It's mostly libertarians. Sometimes there are anti-war leftists and some left-wingers who will get banned, but typically not. That's the power, and they know it. We got a couple other stories. You know, it's funny, we're talking about Elon Musk because World War III apparently started. Russian state TV said the sinking of the Russian flagship, the after this, they said the weapons we are up against are from NATO. They're trying to maintain that the ship sank due to a fire, but the Ukrainians are saying we basically hit it with a Neptune missile. So we'll talk about that. Oh, we definitely got to talk about The Secrets of Dumbledore. It's Friday. We're going to get into it. I haven't seen it, but joining us to explain what's wrong with the plot is Brett Cooper.
Hey, guys. How are you? I mean, okay, so...
Well, you don't. We don't need to get
do
into
it. We need to
exactly.
Right now.
Jumping in.
It's just. It's interesting. It's a mediocre film.
The real story on our end is that they gutted the plot for the Chinese version because Dumbledore prefers the company of men. Mm. And in China, they're like, no, we can't, you know.
It's a real secret. Yeah.
So, that's just for right. America. It's just for America.
So, yeah, Brett, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I am Brett Cooper. I am the newest host at Daily Wire. I host the comment section with Brett Cooper. It's a daily social media cultural reaction show. It's been up and running for about a month now. It's super fun. I come from a background in acting. I was a professional actor for 10 years in Los Angeles, went to UCLA, and now I'm here in Nashville doing politics and culture. It's fun.
Cool. Thanks for coming. We also got Ben Stewart.
I'm actually Michaela Peterson, but you're, none of you are biologists, so
yeah,
it's okay.
Right. I'm going with it.
No, benjosephstewart.com. That's where you can check out all my films, all the work that I do. Also, Ben Stewart Podcast on YouTube. And happy to be back. I think this is my fourth time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. Glad to have you.
It's the fourth turning.
That's right.
That's right. We'll get into that, too, maybe, with the World War III stuff, for sure. We got Ian.
Hi, everyone. Ian Crossland. You know me, and you love me. Mm-hmm. What's up?
Mm-hmm. And I'm also here in the corner pushing buttons. I'm excited to have Brett. I always love having ladies on, and tonight's going to be a super chilly evening, especially with Ben. It's going to be good.
All right, before we get started, my friends, you got to head over to timcast.com. Become a member to help support the work we do here, these trips we do. We came down to the Daily Wire headquarters so we could do fun stuff. You guys, if you didn't see it, we did this crossover stream where I ran out of the trailer and they're filming it with remote tech. All of this is possible because you guys are members helping us grow the company, hire more people, expand the business, and we're taking over the world, figuratively, with your help. We're going to challenge the media, and you're going to get access to exclusive episodes of the Timcast IRL podcast, but what I wanted to say is, I used to say that if you guys like, share, subscribe, you share this video, we could be bigger than CNN. That's right. If every person watching right now just shared the URL, we could be bigger than CNN. Well, ladies and gentlemen, CNN Plus has less daily active users than we do. So I guess, you know, we've sort of met that milestone. So thank you. We really appreciate it. And all of you who are members are a part of that movement where you can laugh and say that you support real media and CNN Plus is failing. I just want to say one thing on that. I see these journalists constantly promoting CNN Plus who don't work there. And I'm just like, it's sad at this point. It's like, I know your friends have a company and it's not working, but stop trying to make it happen. It's like, it's not going to happen. So, yeah. But let's talk about the news. Again, smash that like button. The first story we have here from TimCast.com. Twitter board utilizes poison pill to stop Elon Musk from buying the company. The plan intends to reduce the likelihood that any entity, person, or group gains control of Twitter. Check this out. Do you guys know how this works?
Kind of.
So this is, if Elon Musk tries to buy up more than 15% of the company, they're going to offer special stock to the other investors at a discount rate so they can dilute the equity power that Elon would have, meaning no matter how much he buys, the other investors can buy up and take away the power he's buying. They're effectively destroying their own company to stop Elon Musk from ending their censorship.
Wow.
Yeah, that's probably crazy. Because the Saudi Arabian king is involved with...
Prince.
Yes. The prince as well, the Saudi Arabian state as well, so I imagine it's all going through the king.
Well, elaborate. I know there's a prince who invested.
The prince tweeted out, and it also said that the state itself. He said...
Kingdom
myself,
H.
Yeah, the kingdom.
Is that just his company? Or
well, to be honest, to be fair, I don't know. I assume that was the kingdom itself.
Yeah, I saw Zero Hedge tweeted that he actually sold his shares. I don't know if that's true. The prince sold his shares. I don't know if that's true. It's hard to know, but I think the big play here is that the people who own Twitter, as we mentioned the other day and what we can get into now, they want the power, political power of Twitter to control the conversation.
Saudis aside, I think it's Vanguard. Vanguard upped their stake to say, now we own more than Elon. So there's some very nefarious corporate interests that want control of this mouthpiece that is Twitter.
What do you guys think?
Vanguard and BlackRock have a pretty substantial Disney stake as well.
Yeah. Interesting.
They also own Groom each other, which is weird.
Yeah.
Like they own 2% of the other and stuff like
it's
that.
It's inbred, if you will.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, I had to go there. It's
true.
It's a little inbred when it comes to the money. So
Here's the crazy thing, right? Let me ask you this question, Brett. Do you use Twitter a lot?
Yeah.
Have you always used Twitter a lot?
No, only this year.
See, because only this year, so only for a few months.
Or no, as of last, so in the last year. It was like early 2021.
And you are 20 years old, Gen Z, and you're only recently getting involved in Twitter.
Yep.
Twitter is, it's like the political space, right? Like, how do your friends feel about it, younger people?
Honestly, it is not the most used. I think Instagram and TikTok are just what is most heavily dominated. In politics, everybody is on Twitter, so my friends that are in the political sphere, they are very active, but outside of that... People have like a burner account basically where they go to just look at memes, but they don't tweet anything. They're not involved. It's kind of like, oh yeah, I'll check Twitter. But it's a very, I think in normal circles, it's kind of outdated. Like, that's just whatever. And I never really had a reason or an interest in being on it until I started. I was writing for Fee and they were like, you need to be on there to, you know, promote your articles and that kind of stuff.
But that's not even true.
Yeah.
So when I worked at Fusion, they didn't have Twitter. I think it's been a while, but we had a conversation about how, you know, websites like to put the social media link so you can tweet out the story, post the stories, and they didn't care about Twitter, and I asked them why, and they said Twitter doesn't drive traffic. And so I was like, okay. For me, I was like, Twitter's really important. But back in the day, when it was the free speech wing of the free speech party, it was really important. Now, you know, like I mentioned, I'll post like a picture of a hairless rabbit for no reason and just post nonsense because the platform is garbage.
Twitter's kind of like the repository social media network. I signed up in 08, didn't use it till 2019 because I thought it was crap. But it's YouTube is where it's at. The video makes you famous, and then they come and follow you on Twitter when they find out you have a Twitter account.
Yeah.
No one finds you on Twitter. That's not how it works. I mean, maybe not no one, but it's not.
Well, people found me on Twitter when they realized that I looked like Ben Shapiro. That's where I got the bulk of mine. I had like 400 followers, and then Jeremy retweeted the side-by-side of me and Ben, and it was like, okay, now you have 20,000. And I was like, okay.
Pin tweet on your account right now.
Yeah, you can go check it out.
I'm Brett Cooper.
Yeah, people were chatting female Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
But you're taller.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben's actually not that short. That's
the funny
thing.
Yeah.
You know, we just hung out with him the other day, and I'm like, everybody says he's short. And then he walks up to me, I'm like, oh, he's actually a fairly average, like totally normal guy. They just like lying and making things up because they want to hate on people.
Exactly.
But anyway, back to the reason I was asking you these questions. Twitter's a failing company.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm 36. Ian's 75.
Yeah.
You know?
You look good, though.
Thanks,
you look good, yeah. No, but like, in all seriousness, we're an older demographic, and you have to get young people involved in your culture if you want that culture to persist. Twitter seems to be on a train track that leads just flying off a cliff. They're not convincing young people to be involved in what Twitter is. They have turned Twitter into an activist blog. I called this. I said several years ago when they were banning all the fun people, the trolls and the silliness and the memes, I was like, dude, it's going to turn into a left-wing activist blog. and it's going to have 10 people, and eventually it's going to be one guy, and some people might visit it. But so why would a young person want to go on a platform to be lectured by old fogies complaining about policy?
Yeah.
Instagram and I think Instagram and TikTok you mentioned is it's pictures and video. I mean, it's video for the most part.
Yeah.
Twitter's text. It's a lot of text. You know, you go there to read and research essentially, but not to have fun. I don't know. Is it fun for you?
I mean, I enjoy it because for my show, which is technically me diving into comment sections and that kind of thing, I know. I go into the trenches, my friends. It's the hub of my research, basically. So I enjoy it but most of the stuff that I'm looking at is like, you know, batshit crazy things. And so I personally enjoy it. But I wouldn't go on there if this wasn't like my work. I would probably choose TikTok. I would choose YouTube. I would.
But it used to be fun. People would go on and they'd post memes. Mm-hmm. They'd share memes like crazy. Mm-hmm. And they would troll.
Yeah.
Trolling was fun. And then we get the CEO now, Parag Agrawal, he's like, you know, it's not about free speech. It's about the current state of things and having a healthy conversation. And it's like, dude, if I wanted to go to like a youth seminar where they explained to me, you know, morals or something, sure, I'd book it. If I want to go and just post my thoughts and tell people, like, here's a funny joke, you can't do that on Twitter anymore, so what do? You got to go somewhere else.
What about Reddit? Is Reddit still... I use Reddit sometimes, but how are they with censorship? Like,
it's the worst.
I was going to say, that's what I've heard. I know that,
dude, because that used to be. You know what it is? It's like it feels like like the school principal has taken over the social media platforms.
Yeah.
And it's like we used to, you know, throw bouncing balls down the hall and then run after it. Now the principal's in the hallway all day going like, hey, you don't do that. We're like, this is so lame. Let's go somewhere else.
Lauren Southern tweeted out that it was like only 5 years ago that if someone got banned off of YouTube or Twitter, it was like global news.
Yeah.
And now, geez, you blink and then like a bunch of accounts are gone. I don't know. Who's the most recent ban? Does it even matter? But it's just, it's disturbing how slippery the slope can be.
Remember how fun Alex Jones was?
Yeah. Yes.
And
yes.
Trump?
Was there a point where you ever used Twitter in any, even a little bit before?
Never.
Probably. And that's the thing I think where, you know, I look at the Elon Musk stuff and I'm just like, dude, Twitter is blowing itself up on purpose.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Because and that was another thing that I felt with Elon, that it's like, I love what he's doing, the statement that he's making, but I also kind of had the opinion, like, it already is, like you're saying, a sinking ship. There's so much other crap that's going on in the world. There's so many communities that need us, that, I mean, you know, everything else, and it's like, this is great, but also...
No, he's right. Elon Musk is right.
Yeah.
He posted the top 10 Twitter accounts, and said some of them haven't even posted this year.
Yep.
Like Justin Bieber or whatever.
Yeah.
Because the platform is dead.
Yeah.
Mm. There's users on it. They gain a little bit of users. Dude... You know, we were talking to Jeremy about this, and he's like, hey, I said, I don't even take it seriously anymore. I used to post news stories. Now it's like I post, like, Chicken City is some great accomplishment because I'm like, it's a garbage platform filled with garbage people who just want to they rag on you, they lie about you, they smear you. There's no good conversations. There's no fun. There's no jokes. You'll get banned for saying learn to code. I don't take it seriously. And then, you know, he's like, you have a million followers, though. And I'm like, I don't know why. But I actually do know why. It's what you said.
YouTube fame.
Well, people will watch these shows and then they'll follow on Twitter because they want to just, you know, like, see their news feed and see information. But I can't take a platform seriously if it's dying, and it is. I can gain followers. I'll put it this way. Let's say there's 100 million people that are using the site at any moment. Sure, I have a million followers, so I can lose a bunch and gain a bunch within that sphere. But it feels like the sphere of actual functioning valuable users is just going down.
Yeah, Elon said it was like the town square, and that's why he wants to buy it to free it. I don't know if he's right about that. It doesn't. I'm on it a little bit, but it's such a small thing.
It's kind of like the bathroom stall wall. It feels like.
Yeah.
More than the town square.
I wonder if him just saying, okay, forget it, I'm not buying it, let it fail, might be the right move than try and waste energy and time pouring all this money into some, you know, relatively dying platform. It'd be cool if he could free the software code, but we really don't need it.
Hmm. What would be the town square, though?
If YouTube?
It was not, yeah, I guess.
I think so. What do you think?
It's not centralized. Mm. There's disparate communities. The thing about Twitter is it's really easy to overlap with different groups.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Ben was mentioning that he trends once every 3 weeks, and it's because one of his tweets will merge into another community, which will then go nuts about it. Mm-hmm. YouTube doesn't do that. YouTube is much more rigid. You know,
like if you don't get shown like stuff that
you can't,
is outside
it's very
of
siloed.
Your,
you can't retube. True, video.
Yeah, true.
And so
they used to have that, your channel page. You could post stuff on your channel page and all your followers would see your channel posts. That was like in 2007.
I think you can still do that if
you
like
community.
Yeah, you like stuff and but YouTube can't capture that. So Twitter became this rapid, it became political because it's, what are you posting? You're posting ideas. Mm-hmm. YouTube, you're posting videos. Instagram, you're posting photos. So it makes sense that the platform that typically is about text, idea, concepts, information would become political news, some of the highest level stuff. The problem is Twitter sought to light itself on fire, burn itself to the ground, and make it a trash platform that nobody wants to use.
Yep.
I thought it was doomed from the beginning. I 2008, there's videos of me in 2008 when all the people were like, hey, this new thing, it's Twitter. I'm like, oh, great, another one. We just did Facebook. We already have YouTube. What are you guys doing? We have our... And they're like, we got to tweet our message, our six-word messages to each other. I'm like, dude, text is going to warp our minds. Don't fall into it.
I agree and disagree, especially with the text warping your mind, but I disagree on the prospects of Twitter. When I started using it, I think I signed up in 2009, I was like, what's the big deal with this? Mm-hmm. And then within a little while, I was like, whoa, I get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The rapid virality. Like, you tweet something, and if it's good information, if it's a funny joke, it ripples outward in a massive wave that gets bigger. That little pebble you drop can become a tsunami. Remember that woman who was on a plane and she made that joke about AIDS?
Oh my gosh.
And then, like, her phone was off, and then when she landed, they destroyed her life.
Jeez.
She had like 200 followers. You ever hear this story?
Mm-mm.
This lady had like 200 followers, and then she made a joke about how white people tend not to get AIDS in Africa, but it was actually a social justice joke. The point she was making was that the people who are mostly victimized by this tend to be black.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it in a tongue-in-cheek way. This was like one of the first major cancellations, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The tweet went viral, and she was just some like random woman, and she lands and she like had a panic attack. There were news stories written about her. They were going nuts.
Wow.
You know what ends up happening is people like, there's this viral thread going around explaining how Elon Musk will not be able to save the platform because he doesn't understand that Web 1.0 is over. The era of the Wild West internet is gone. And this guy explains that in the beginning of the internet, it was the frontier. It was barren wastelands. Yeah, you can go out into the middle of a barren wasteland and scream whatever stupid, ridiculous nonsense you want because ain't nobody going to hear it. Eventually, some people show up. And then those who don't like hearing the crazy guy in the desert screaming leave, and those who think it's funny stick around and watch. But where we're at now with the internet, the foundations have been built. It's not just the frontier anymore. It's totally urbanized. Mm-hmm. The internet now is the world. You can't just go into the middle of the city and start screaming insane things. The cops will come and tell you to keep it down. They'll say you have your free speech, you can't scream. People will come and scream back at you. A fight might break out. And so what this guy is saying is, because of that, censorship emerges. And he's like, the only thing the big tech platforms want is for you to calm the F down, be civil. And I'm reading this and I'm like, dude's right about the frontier thing, wrong about the censorship and what they want.
Yeah.
The people at Twitter are all biased. Not every single person. I mean, like the higher ups, they are. They think they're not. They are. It's baked into their rules. They will ban you for calling someone dude, like when they suspended Zuby. And this makes it not fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong. I'll put it this way. How many of you on your day off would decide to go somewhere so that someone can scream in your face about how ugly you are? you'd be like, no, I'll just go to the movies instead, right? That's what Twitter has become by eliminating the fun and by their outright bias.
I think what you said about the Web 1 concept is definitely true, and you know, you see Facebook changing the name to Meta. The metaverse, according to Bloomberg standards, should be like an $800 billion industry by 2024. And I'm just curious how Twitter would be able to kind of keep up in that kind of direction.
Well, I
know that text will always be relevant in that respect. I just kind of wonder, it's less versatile. I wonder if it could start moving in that direction.
If Elon buys it and links it up with the neural net, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, when I asked about the town square thing, immediately the first thing that came to my mind was, well, maybe it will be the metaverse. And especially if it's, you know, Web 2.0 or whatever this is, where, you know, we're talking about, like, cops are you know, screaming at you, that kind of thing. I'm imagining there was this, I think it was Wall Street Journal. They had one of their journalists go live in the metaverse for 24 hours, and she did a YouTube video about it. She like, they put her in a hotel room and they gave her food. And she had to do, like, all of her meetings. She worked out. She, like, went to bars in it. And she just lived in it. And she had to deal with all of these random people. And I was like, oh my God, maybe that is the future of our social media. And so imagine what censorship would be like in the metaverse.
I was just going to say there's a it's something that Truth Theory on Instagram posted, that there's a guy who lived a week in the metaverse. He only had the goggles on, and he would eat everything. And he said that there were, like, amazing aspects to it, because he would go to, like, meditation class, and he was meditating for, like, an hour, 2 hours a day. But, like, there was parts of it that were making him go insane, and his dreams were really messed up because of it.
Dude, I had a dream 3 nights ago where I was in a video game, but it was realistic. It was like this. And in order to get through the part that I was at, I had to kill a dog in the game. You know, like in World of Warcraft, you have to fight dogs and stuff. But it was real, and it was a little dog. And they were like, I was like, how do I do this? They're like, the most humane way, you know, you got to choke it. So I did in the dream, and it was so disturbing. And now I'm thinking about these people going into the VR metaverse, and they're going to be killing things like a video game, but it's going to seem real. What is that going to do to people?
Talk about
video games make people violent.
Yeah,
okay. Jeez, it made me sickeningly disturbed.
I agree and disagree. I think there are going to be. It's very different from playing a video game with the controller, where you're watching a screen and you have some kind of avatar or first person shooter. You know, we've seen many studies. The video games don't cause violence. They can desensitize in other ways that can make violence worse if you're prone to it. I think the real issue is that if you're a regular person and you do metaverse stuff, I don't think you're going to go around beating dogs. But if you're prone to these things, then this could exacerbate or at least desensitize you and make, you know, the tendency to violence worse.
A lot of video games, maybe, I don't know, 90%, 80% of them are fighting, shooting, punching, kicking. Like, if you get that, and that's all of a sudden all these people are,
I've done a deep dive. There's Into the Metaverse and Welcome to the Metaverse, these two podcasts. I think Into the Metaverse is Bloomberg specific. And, like, just going deep on, like, what is this? And a lot of people, a lot of the execs that they have, they're like, this is huge, but it's not like crypto. It's not something you just dump money into. You need to understand what it's here to do and, like, why there are countries, like, I think it was Sweden, that bought, like, sizable real estate there for their embassy and stuff like that. So, like, you don't have to go. You can go and kind of be in person. But they're like, what they're really saying is, like, it's not like a video game. Think video games having to bend to meet the internet. So it's spatial web. You're interacting with the internet. It's not exactly like a video game. So you're right. There's a lot of violence and stuff like that there. But this is gaming meeting virtual, like, internet stuff that you would do to go and get paperwork done. And the one thing I was thinking about when you were mentioning the dream is the technology that's coming out potentially being able to give people eyesight that is only virtual, but seeing something, you know, like hooking it in and they're seeing what they're seeing, like, through camera. They wear these glasses in the same way that the heads up displays, Mojo Vision, all that kind of stuff works, but they're actually seeing it through their vision. So there's things like that,
I got something for you. You got time for a project? Do something crazy?
Yes.
Get a VR headset. Bluetooth link it to a 360 camera, wear a backpack and have a 360 camera on a monopod going up over your head, have the 360 degree view on your VR visor screen and learn how to see in 360.
Crazy.
Yeah, we planned that project a while ago, but we never actually did it, even though it's extremely easy to do. But the idea is out there. Anybody who wants to do it, do it.
I have mixed emotions, but I think I would do it. Yeah. Have you ever, like, in school, they would put these, like, mirrored glasses on to where you see the world upside down, and you would just, like, throw a ball back and forth, but you wouldn't see it going up like this. You would see it coming down and up, and it was super weird. But once you got the hang of it, it took like 15 minutes, and eventually you got the hang of it. Then you take the glasses off and you have to adjust again. It takes another 15 minutes to adjust back to the normal way.
Let me ask you, Brett, would you get the Neuralink and plug your brain into a computer?
I don't think so, no.
Why not?
I don't trust it. I don't know. I'm just very wary about all of it. So I was, even though I, you know, live on social media now for work, I was raised without television. did not barely watch any movies growing up, was not allowed to play video games, was not allowed to have social media until I was, you know, 16 or something like that. One of the reasons why I wasn't on Twitter. Just read a ton. I was a classic homeschooled kid. But I just don't really trust that. And also with the, wasn't part of Neuralink where they want to be able to like control dopamine levels and like that kind of thing. I know that's part of it.
Is that it part of it?
Some of it is. And it's like that.
That's scary.
And it's like that part of it, I think there's something that's interesting. I think the technology is fascinating. And it's like, if you want to try, go ahead. I'm just not going to really be your guinea pig. I think I trust myself more than I trust technology.
So that's the key right there, yeah, is like technology is doing something that it's not that we can't do these things. Yeah. There are ways, but a lot of the times it's like, what's the easiest way to do it? Take this pill and then forget about it. Don't engage with your healing, you know.
Well, it reminds me of just everything these days. I feel like I look at the world and it's like you can get your groceries delivered to you. You can use an app and suddenly somebody's coming and like hanging up something in your house. Like everything is digitalized to the point that it's like I could just stay, never leave my house, and my life would function on, whether it would be like, you know, wearing VR goggles, being on Zoom, like everything that feels very tactical and real in the world, slowly being eroded in my eyes. And then add, you know, big pharma, and we're just medicating the crap out of my generation.
Oh, I'm looking forward to the psychedelic metaverse. People are going to be like heavily on psychedelics in the...
They're making patches for just that. So patches, think cocktails, MDMA, ketamine, slight doses, but you go in to have whatever kind of experience you want to have. I think that's why psychedelics have gone IPO like gangbusters lately, is this idea of also where the metaverse is going, these fully immersive experiences where you, like 1984, you almost don't revolt against it. It's servitude in a sense, but you don't revolt against it because you have everything at your disposal. Why get off the couch?
I was thinking a new career might be like a nanny, metaverse nannies. They make sure you're fed and that you're able to poop and pee and take it away for you, make sure your body's clean.
Oh my God.
But this stay there.
You can get robots
this
to
is,
do that.
So just the distinction here is the current metaverse is like you wear goggles. The future metaverse with Neuralink is you lay down in some kind of sensory deprivation chamber floating and you plug in your brain. And then all of a sudden your brain experiences the metaverse.
Somebody should make a movie about that, where you're like in this warm, gooey liquid and you're hooked up in the back of your head and experiencing.
But you, every day, you know, you wake up, you go, oh man, what a day. And you're check this out, you're ripped. You are as fit can be. No. And you don't work out. Because when you can plug your brain in, it just controls stimulation. So while you're sitting in the metaverse, your body's, you know, just twitching and being programmed to build this perfect lean body in every way, you know, processing the right nutrients, craving the right things, or they just plug in the feeding tube and you put it in your throat and then plug yourself in. And
you don't have
people don't realize.
I wonder what would the purpose of life then be if we were just hooked up?
To fight dragons.
Obviously. Well,
you plug yourself in and you're...
That's it.
Float.
What do you think is the purpose?
That stresses me out.
What do you think is the purpose of life?
Productivity and work.
More of
an objectivist.
What would you say about learning?
Real quick, just to what end? To what end?
How far would I go?
No, if the point of life is productivity and work, to what end? Is it just indefinite work and creation, or is there something where you're going?
To leave the world a better place than I started it, or to create something tangible.
Can it always be better? Like,
I think so.
Within the realm of physical creation, shouldn't there be some point where we're like, it cannot get any better than this or something, you know?
Maybe. Do you think that, I don't know if that's possible, because I feel like human innovation is kind of difficult to...
I suppose the thing is... If we were to say, like, what's better, it would be people being well-fed, safe, good medical care, and things like this, and better dwellings, better living, and we've dramatically improved that, thanks to capitalism, mind you. Mm-hmm. And with the metaverse, one could argue that you'll have everything you've ever wanted, all of those things, but it's more like heroin than it is actually making the world a better place.
Yeah.
You're starving, you're frail and shaking in the corner, and you're like, I don't want to go work, man, just plug me in the metaverse. And then you walk over and you're shaking, you're like super pale, and then you plug your brain in, and then you flashes, and you're standing there 6'6", super ripped NBA star, and you're like, yeah, and you're dunking. Mm-hmm. and people won't want to walk away
or
from it.
Or it's going to, the haptic feedback is going to make your muscles strong. You'll be able to live like 6 days in the span of 20 minutes, and you'll have all this knowledge when you come out, and you'll be a superhuman. That's going to be hard to compete with.
What if we're in that
now? Like, there's so much nuance with this because, like, that's a possibility for sure. But I think that, like, what we're talking about here is, like, what's – you were saying to what end, and could the value come from being hooked up to the metaverse? Like, imagine if 7.5 billion were hooked up to the metaverse, perhaps the planet would do better. You know, perhaps some species would the, or the rate of extinction would slow down. So, but I also feel that, like, humans, when you had, was it Michael Knowles and
Jeremy? No, Michael Knowles and Jeremy Boring were on last night.
Okay. I thought Seamus was on.
He was also on last night, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that was the one that I was listening to when you guys were having the, would it be better to save the dog with the cure for cancer? Or, you know, like, I was thinking about all that, and the way that they were putting it is like, I feel like we are here to engage with what's already here, and like, to improve upon it is debatable. It's definitely debatable, but I definitely think that, like, with much of technology, it's not that we've been ripped from being able to acknowledge that we have what we need here. And a lot of it is like, if we were hooked up to the metaverse, would the planet actually be doing better? Or would we be missing the point?
Well, you know, not every person on the planet is destroying it. So maybe what we would need is some powerful individual to create a system where we can round up all of those that we deem unfit and force them into the metaverse.
I like this idea.
Yeah, you know, and then the world will be a better place once those people are no longer allowed to engage with it.
I think China would have the stomach to do that.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know what we could do? Like, if there's a pandemic, we could weld people's doors shut and seal them inside until they starve to death.
Yeah. Something about being... the metaverse will be fine.
Yeah, because, okay, that's a good point. No one's going to want to be stuck and imprisoned in the metaverse. People, like any good slave, they're going to want you to want to be in it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Brave New World. Not 1984.
Also,
it's like the World Economic Forum thing where they're like, in 2030, you will own nothing. You will, what is that? What are
they? You'll
be happy. Yeah, that kind of thing. That makes me think of the metaverse.
But that may be true.
Mm-hmm.
They say you will own nothing. I think we should correct that statement from the World Economic Forum. What they should say is, you will own the dragon's bracers of ultimate power and the sword, the level 99 sword of Volciferon, NFT. And you'll be so stoked.
The problem is you only own a license to the game that they give you it in. Because I get banned off Steam, then I don't have access to any of those games.
No. You'll own the NFT. You just won't have a house, clothes, a car.
Yeah. You'll have your
family.
Pod, though. You'll have the floating pod.
And the best part is, you don't have to eat the bugs. No. When you're in the metaverse, the bugs just flow through the feeding tube into your gut. And you don't got to think twice.
Has anyone seen the new Blade Runner with Ryan Gosling?
No.
Mm-mm. A while ago.
It's a glimpse. Jared Leto's role in that and what he's talking about, how, like, you know, we lost our stomach for slavery, so now we started creating the slaves, like full-grown adults and stuff like that. Soundtrack is dope in that, by the way, too. But, like, very revealing the way they look at, like, kind of the future of where commerce is going and having, like, virtual sex slaves and things along those lines. I think Blade Runner, the one with Ryan Gosling, it's kind of an eye-opener.
People are going to go insane from the metaverse. Because you take a look at what's going on now with kids, and let's just try to be family-friendly, adult content on the internet being so just... what's this?
Pervasive?
Pervasive.
Two-thirds of the internet?
Yeah. The eclectic nature of it. Meaning, like, Rule 34?
Rule 34, yeah.
Is that the one where it's like, if it exists, there's porn of it?
Correct.
Yes, okay.
Unfortunately.
So the old rules of the internet. Imagine what happens when you're in the metaverse, and it's not just an image you can look at, but you can actually experience. And so the Black Mirror did an episode about this where the guy, he goes into the video game where he's a woman, and he bangs a panda. People are going to go crazy because they're going to get out and be like, you know, I'd love to have a family with you, but I'm only attracted to clouds. It's like,
what?
Well, in the metaverse, you can go up to the cloud and talk to it and do what you want to do. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we're sort of at that point with people in neo pronouns. Like, I was looking at a girl on TikTok recently, and she was like, I identify as like death self, and plant self. I mean, there
plant
is
self.
Like, yeah, plant self. And it's, we're already.
Did you see doll self?
No, but that does not surprise me.
She like shaved her head and she's like, I am doll.
Horrifying.
And like,
I mean,
one eye like goes, you know.
It's up there with the furries.
Yeah, it's worse.
Yeah.
I mean, look. I'm fairly libertarian. Mm-hmm. If I don't care if people want to, you know, dress up however they want to dress up, or metaverse what they want to do. The point is, at a certain point, people are going to, they're going to segment away from, there's not going to be a cohesive society.
Yeah. That's
my point.
I agree.
A problem is that kids are going to go in and with haptic feedback, full body suits on so they can feel everything they're experiencing. And then someone else is, an old man is going to be in there shaped as a cloud and he's going to be like, come here, child. And then the kid will go up and basically have sex with this digital sex with this other person. And it's going to warp because, yeah, they'll be doing it with AI and interacting, but it won't be the same as with another human on the other end.
Bro, there's going to be a predator in the game and someone's going to meet, it's going to be a catfish, dude. Mm-hmm. You're going to be a 30-year-old straight guy in the metaverse and you're going to meet this, you know, attractive young blonde woman and you're going to do the haptic feedback stuff and it's going to turn out to be like a 63-year-old morbidly obese man who's like,
yeah, that's right, young man.
I think this is where the identity fluidity is coming in. I definitely believe that if not intentional, it's working towards what you can become in the metaverse. In the metaverse, there's already been like, I don't know if it was straight rape because it didn't have the functionality in the game to do it, but harassment, like several guys coming up and cornering a girl and just not letting her out. That's happened in the game.
You can block someone in the metaverse?
You just call it metaverse cops.
Hold on. You go like this. You go, for those that are listening, I'm motioning my hands, taking the goggles off.
Yeah, that's how it works.
And then you're like,
but I had to take
nothing.
My goggles off and I didn't want to.
Yeah.
Against my will.
Yeah. Or you just, you just click the button that teleports you to the other room.
Mm-hmm. That could be another one. But like a lot of what I think this is doing, when you were saying the haptic suits and as I was saying with the patches that can modulate hormones as well as Terrell McSweeney, I think she worked under Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. She's now talking about the Internet of Bodies and how how's it going to get classified? Is it going to be something where if you have a handicap, you can fix it by getting your eyesight back, or is it an upgrade? And then once it goes that far, they've already talked about if you're a sex offender. And this was, I think, in 2016, Terrell McSweeney was, or 2017, she was talking about this. You can have one of these implants that can lower create more inhibition against some of those drives of sexual predators. So then they had to start getting into, well, are they allowed to have those drives?
What about prison and what prison is? Let's imagine we get to the point where Neuralink is a plug in your brain, right? Because Elon Musk's already done that with the pigs where they put the electrodes. Let's say we get to the point where you actually have a port. And it's wireless. You can wirelessly connect to the metaverse. Let's say you're a child predator. You get convicted. And so they say, we're sentencing you to 15 years in the metaverse. But in the metaverse, it's a mundane existence where you can never act upon any of these urges. And you're internal in your own basically virtual prison. Your body is being programmed to do menial labor. So the prison sentence is your body is just... What can I get for you today? We have a double cheeseburger on the menu. In your mind, your conscious self is trapped in this metaverse reality, which is a prison.
That feels like Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah. I'm also scared that about time warping in the game, or in the metaverse, not a game, where it will literally feel like 15 years of your life, but it's only 20 minutes.
Like Inception.
And they can just snap you in, and you're like, or you could even do it to yourself. You're like, I want to live a life, and you do it. And it's like when you come back, you barely even remember your friends when you come back.
There's a show about that we mentioned. I can't remember if it was a show or a movie where this guy invents they're like eye drops, and that they're nanobots that can they're programmed to make you experience a certain amount of time. Hmm. So the original idea is like you drop it in your eye, and then you're on a ski trip, and so it's like in the blink of an eye, you have a weekend in Aspen. But then the guy's like, I want to turn into a prison. And so he makes like a 50-year sentence or whatever, something like that. And then, this woman gets trapped in it or something. I don't know, something like that. It's crazy.
I think you might be referring to an episode of Black Mirror.
Was it Black Mirror?
Yeah, it was some guys who are up north in one of these like an Arctic fort or something. And they realized that they were not actually in reality because they couldn't go outside. They couldn't do anything. They were like, oh my God.
No, it's a different movie I'm talking about.
And there was a lady who got stuck in it. She was like screaming and trying to get help. And it felt like years and years had passed and it had been like 10 minutes or something. That is one of the most horrifying things to me. The idea of being able to get people to believe that it's been a really long time. Mm-hmm. Kind of a Rip Van Winkle effect. It's like insane. Like, I really don't like the direction this could go. Like, who knows how we could psychologically torture people.
I think it's called Other Life.
Hmm. Interesting. Mm.
Do you remember when I was talking about the fourth turning the first time it came on, and it was like during a crisis period, the most advanced weapons of war are used? What you just explained, Lydia, seems it to me. Like, you know, torture on the deepest psychological level. Then getting back to the prison thing, what's interesting is like, you know, prison, at least it has this, you know, attempt in the title of being a rehabilitation facility.
Right.
Could something like that actually get more targeted into rehabilitation? Because I know that I think it was in, not Nevada, it might have been Arizona. There was a prison where they just decided to dress all the inmates in pink, paint all the walls pink, and it lowered crime incredibly. And then there's this other one in Thailand when I was out there training in Muay Thai, where you could actually fight your way out. And their world champion fought his way out of prison. You could actually fight it out.
Really? Like in Batman, when they're like, if you can climb out, you're free?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And this guy did. He became world champion. Then Dave LeDuc, a Canadian, came and whooped his ass in bare-knuckle boxing.
Wow.
But, like, I think there's more we could do prison-wise to not make it the, like, what prison does to people. I think you could probably get more intelligent with what you said, using the metaverse or whatever, maybe plant medicine, something like that.
Yeah.
You just can't force people to do plant medicine, you know, at least morally, you know.
Administrate psychedelics to prisoners, you mean?
Ayahuasca. You know, well, how many people have these life-changing experiences under right guidance? Under the wrong guidance, it could be the worst thing in your
life. What if we start programming prisoners? What if, you know, we get to this point where such bad things happen in our society, we just say, you know what, it is better that we Neuralink or, you know, program the brain. Instead of sending them to prison, we, like you were mentioning with child predators, we wire their brain in a way so that they cannot act on certain impulses or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, turn off the aggression, turn off attraction. Because they haven't, don't they already chemically castrate some people? Do they do that?
I believe so, yeah.
Could be wrong about that. Maybe that was a movie.
Not in every... I think I've heard of that in countries. I know that I heard that recently, people in Ukraine saying, like, if we capture Russians, we're going to castrate them.
But, that's like a threat of... like to
And that's
scared.
In war as well, not prison.
Do they do this? Because this may be just some, like, fictional idea where a sex offender gets, you know, pills so that they can't...
That is child predators.
Yeah, is that...
I think so. Let me look it up.
I feel like I saw that.
But I think that's interesting. Because, like, think about, like, a lot of people say, well, prison, like, people don't commit some crime. Some people don't commit crimes for the threat of what might happen. So, like, imagine the threat of a Neuralink in your brain where all those urges go away. Mm-hmm. And it's not up to you anymore.
What if... I mean, man. Neuralink is some scary stuff, man. Because I don't think we even understand how terrifying it can be. It's not going to be wired. It's going to be wireless.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you need a wired cable? No, it's going to Wi-Fi connect to your brain, and then someone's going to hack your brain and make you experience some crazy stuff. And then what happens if someone hacks your brain, and then you're feeling like you're being attacked by ninjas, and you're really just beating the crap out of strangers, you know?
The lack of control is just... probably the most horrifying thing to me.
I think social media is like the early adoption of that, the way people can be twisted just by media.
Well, I was even thinking with like metaverse stuff, like we've seen, especially with Gen Z and, you know, my generation that's grown up with social media, just like our slew of mental health issues and the way that we are desensitized to basically everything and the way that we function is so drastically different than other generations. I mean, you look at, did a business program at Berkeley before I graduated, and we had this whole class on like corporate psychology, and it was all of these HR departments at huge orgs prepping for Gen Z because they're like, you're so sensitive. You are, you know, we have to basically rework our entire structure to prep for this generation that has been, you know, royally screwed by social media. So it's like, if that is just what has happened with, you know, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, like, what the hell is going to happen when we put...
The reason I asked you earlier how you felt about it was because I think what will end up happening, the metaverse will not be popular at first. Some people will get it for necessity because it'll be easier to work when you're using the metaverse, and it'll probably start with a headset. Eventually, they'll make some kind of simple EEG interface. Eventually, some people will opt to get some kind of, like, wireless implant. When the young people are entering the workforce, it's going to be normal. People are going to do it. It's not going to be an issue of whether you think it's weird or creepy. It's going to be like, oh, but, you know, everyone does it.
What I wonder is how much diet plays a role. Because you were saying before the show that you're keto, or you've been keto for a while.
For
a while, and it helped clean up the mind.
Yeah.
I found that cleansing the gut biome. And I wonder, it's hard to measure, like, how much of it is these microplastics or, you know, estrogen in the water? Or, like, have you studied this stuff? Ben, I know you look into this stuff from time to time. Is it quantifiable how much diet has impacted the youth in addition to social media? Because I, for a long time, just thought it's got to be social media.
It has to be. And, like, I mean, it's such a nuanced question, because look at our topsoil and now look at our microbiomes. Like, the microbiome of the earth is eroding. There's, like, the amount of supplementation you need to have the microbiome naturally that our ancestors had is going to cost you a lot of money. You can't do it on low or minimum wage. So that's just the microbiome. And then you're adding on top of it the PCBs, the microplastics, whatever else is in there. I'm hearing a lot about graphene, you know, and stuff like that, even in water supplies. So there's things that we can account for, things that we can't account for. And then there's sedentary lifestyle, which is huge. So, like, there was this guy, Steven Jepson, 80 years old, neverleavetheplayground.com. And he was taking people over the age of 65. And because past 65, if you break your hip, your mortality rate goes through the roof. Mm-hmm. He was just doing things like two buckets in front of them, bare feet, picking up objects like marbles and tacks with your toes and dropping it into the other bucket. That would, like, work on the talus and up here. And it would actually, they would notice that it was halting neurodegenerative disorders, like, or diseases like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, stuff like that. And then, like, making it trickier, like, you have to stand up and do it. Stuff like that is important for the brain. It turns neurology back on. It promotes neurogenesis and neuroplasticity. And that's just what we can quantify. So, like, it's a whole new playing field, because the, like, everything from the soil to the way we sit all day long. And as you were saying,
like, a very sedentary lifestyle. And
we've gotten to the point where we don't need to get up anymore.
Yeah.
And the metaverse is going to exacerbate that. So it's really, it's those who want to engage with health and decide that I'm not going to wait for somebody else to do it for me. I need to do it for myself.
And that's huge, especially with, like, the pharmaceutical conversation, where it's like, I mean, you can look at how many kids in the last 20, 25 years have suddenly been diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, or any other mental health thing. And so you just throw any drug on top of them rather than addressing what is your lifestyle? What are you eating? Are you even going outside? How much time are you spending online? It's like, sure, here, take these meds, that kind of thing. We're just royally screwing up our bodies when they're very natural. And this isn't like some hippie holistic whatever. It's like, no, we have, it's very new that we have just been, you know, throwing these things on our brains. And
right. It's new. The technology, the pills, the chemicals didn't exist. Depending on which medicine, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, hormones were isolated, I think, the beginning of the 1900s, and estrogen was in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. High fructose corn syrup, aspartame in the early 80s, like, that stuff's relatively
sucralose,
new too.
Sucralose, all this weird stuff we're doing.
The fact that you have to say, this food is organic over here, like, we're going to label it as organic, is strange, because now look at the ratio of organic to non-organic in stores. Like, the fact that you have to label it like that means that everything else is not, and it probably has things in that that will affect you, neurotransmitters all the way down to the hormones. So, like, it's a lot. And you were just talking about, like, well, you said ADHD, but, like, autism.
Yeah.
We laugh at simple approaches to these things, and we applaud pharmaceutical, profit-based ones, whereas if you speak to somebody with autism in a prosodic voice, meaning kind of lilting, poetic, up and down, it halts in its tracks the symptoms of autism almost completely. And this was Stephen Porges' polyvagal theory. Just the way you speak to them is different. They stop staring at your mouth and they start staring at your eyes. Symptoms go away. And that's just one of many things. And what are we don't get into that conversation, because just let the, you know, the pharmaceutical companies take care of that. That's the narrative.
It's the same with schizophrenia and that sort of thing. We have a very good family friend of ours who runs a fantastic nonprofit, and he is a schizophrenic, but he has completely controlled his voices. I think he also has OCD. I'm pretty sure he's bipolar as well, multiple personality disorder, that kind of thing. He had a whole slew of trauma when he was younger. Was in jail many, many, many times, completely turned it around, is now fully in control of his voices, runs two businesses and his nonprofit, and is totally like carnivore and is, but it's all based on lifestyle and he's totally off meds. And it is wild to see how those very simple, I mean, you have to be very, you know, committed to those lifestyle choices, but mm-hmm. the power that you have as an individual to make those changes, to not be, you know, at the beck and call of a.
That was a really intense conversation, you guys, just about so much. Let's tone it down a little bit and talk about how the Russian state TV has said that the Ukraine invasion has already escalated into World War III.
Cool.
Viewers were told to recognize that Russia is now fighting against NATO infrastructure, if not NATO itself. Okay, I'm honestly really tired about Ukraine, World War III, blah, blah, blah. I was working on my main segment for my Timcast channel. And originally I was like, I guess we'll talk about this because, you know, the West is supplying weapons to the Ukrainians. They did sink the Russian flagship, the Moskva. And now they're saying it's World War III because Western forces are basically supplying Ukrainians. And then I was just like, I don't talk about Elon Musk because I'm just kind of sick of talking about this. And the bigger issue here, I don't think, is the day-to-day play-by-play of the war and the stupid points being made by pundits, but the fourth turning. So I'm gonna use that to launch back to, you know, I think maybe the first time we had you on, Ben, mm-hmm. we were talking about the fourth turning and how we didn't know what it was going to be, maybe war with China, and now it looks like it's going to be war with Russia. Brett, are you familiar with what the fourth turning is?
No, not at all.
All right. Do you want to give us the elevator pitch, Ben?
I will. And first, I'd like to say that you wanted to tone it down into World War III. I love that. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure the audience really also understands that. Yeah. So Neil Howe and William Strauss wrote a book back, published in 1997. I think they researched it for 10 years. And it's called The Fourth Turning. And in 97, when this book came out, it's laying out like sometime around, well, basically there are seasons and it takes about 80 to 90 years. So every 80 to 90 years, there seems to be a crisis period. So you go back, it was World War II, Great Depression. Back before that, it was Civil War. Mm-hmm. Back before that, Revolutionary War. You could even trace it back before that in England with the Glorious Revolution and a little bit further back. But basically, it's this idea that there's a, after a crisis period, there's a high. And there's an awakening, which would be the 60s, 70s, that kind mm-hmm. of culture. And then there's an unraveling, which is like, I always get into the music that shows you what the culture is, like the Nirvana, mm-hmm. Soundgarden, this like, it's okay not to pretend like everything's great, girls, girls, girls. No, we're going to talk about like something is coming apart. So anyway, they said by 2005, give or take 3 years, there's going to be an inciting incident. Mm-hmm. And that inciting incident will likely be economic, and it will steamroll into many other things. They mentioned Bill Gates and vaccine agendas in one sentence. They said the possibility for a pandemic. Mm-hmm. They said the possibility for rural gangs and or urban gangs and rural militias, you know, at each other's throats. I think BLM and Proud Boys and that kind of stuff, all the way to weapons of mass destruction, or the thought of weapons of mass destruction, a plane being hijacked by terrorists, and then it all potentially comes back on the country itself as a false flag attack. And I'm just like, well, 97, like most of these things come to pass.
So the gist is, aside from their, you know, the predictions they put out, right, which we're seeing to a certain degree, it's that the fourth turning is the fourth season, the fourth generation or 20 year period where some great catastrophe happens. Mm-hmm. And so we're supposed to be in that right now. And the culmination is what? It ends 2028, but it should be culminating 2026, like the peak, the climax, the crescendo.
Which is the 250-year birthday of the U.S. Which,
whoa!
Who is that person who said, I forget what his name is, but he says empires only last 250 years. Yeah. That's its life expectancy. Mm-hmm. And in every fourth turning, the most advanced weapons of war will be used. So the last one you see, obviously, mm-hmm. Nagasaki, Hiroshima. This time around, we were talking last time, like, what do you think it would be? You think it would be bigger bombs or more death and destruction? And you said something that I thought was very on point, which was like the mind. It's social psychological media. Mm-hmm. warfare and what we're talking about now. and then dovetailing into the metaverse, I think, you know, it's that, and also this technology that potentially even frequency wise can modulate hormones. I mean, I think it's already being used. And I would say that there's a lot of people who say that, you know, fourth turning is only like 75% to 80% correct, and I'm like, they wrote it in 97. If they were 50% correct, that's incredible.
Mm. Right.
So
So is it...
And, hold on, Joe Biden, remember, you did that thing where he was talking about the New World Order?
Yeah.
He says in that, every 3 to 4 generations, there's this big... I forget the exact words he uses.
First, he said something funny. Mm. I was in a, what do you say, a high security meeting.
Military
guy told me this, and it's like, Joe, please don't leak.
Stop.
Top, you know, clearance information. But what he was saying was that a high-ranking military officer told him that effectively the Strassow generational theory was correct, or at least alluded to this idea. Joe Biden says 60 million people died, or whatever, and so he says there's going to be a new world order. And he's referring to the liberal world order, and what they're saying is it's changing now with this coming conflict, and there's going to be a new one, and we have to lead it. So it sounds like even Joe Biden thinks things are going to escalate, but let me revise my previous position and entertain a possibility here. In the fourth turning, the most powerful weapons are used, and we talked about this. Maybe it's social media, the psychological manipulation and control of the population. If you can get a country to worship you without firing a single bullet, of course you would. It's cheaper, it's faster, it's easier, it's safer, right? It's more efficient. You save resources. You don't take out power plants you might need in the future. But now what we're seeing in Russia, Zelensky, he keeps screaming bloody murder. He's warning now that Russia will use nuclear weapons. I got to be honest. When he came out and was like, oh no, the nuclear power plant, and the International Nuclear Committee or whatever this group was like, oh, not, everything's fine. They weren't going after the reactors. I'm like, this guy, I get it. He's desperate for help. Ukraine is being beaten down. Russia is firing missiles, all that stuff. But then when he comes out and says they're going to use nukes, I go, oh, really? And then I see on Russian TV, they're like, NATO is supplying weapons to Ukrainians and they sank our flagship. If the Russians believe the sinking of their Black Sea flagship was NATO and not Ukraine, which they probably do, because let's be real, Ukraine is said to be one of the only countries, or the only country, to become poorer since the fall of the Soviet Union. They have the capability to sink a Russian flagship. Russia denies it at first. They claim credit. If Russia really does believe that NATO is supplying forces, NATO is attacking them, why wouldn't Russia say nukes?
Hitler, that's why he declared war on the United States, because they were running weapons to Britain when Britain was at war with Germany, before the United States, Germany ever gone to war. Think about, Hitler was a genocidal maniac. Putin doesn't seem like it. He just seems like he wants the territory. So I don't think he's going to go to world war. I don't think he's going to declare war on NATO. But I mean, if they keep blowing up Russian ships with NATO weapons, what choice does Russia have at that point? Mm. I mean, you could always surrender. They could always surrender.
What if Putin
or call a white peace and just end it?
What if Putin was like, you know, I don't want the world to end, so I quit. And then, like, they just stop.
It's happened many times in the past.
Really?
If you fight a war to a stalemate and both sides decide, it's called a white peace. You just, it's over. And there's no victory terms. No one wins. No one loses.
You brought up Hitler. Have you heard of Tim Snyder? He writes about, like, Ukraine and Hitler's Eastern Front more than Hitler's Western Front. And he's fully convinced that, and I think he's written 7 books on it, that Ukraine was Hitler's eastern aim and maybe the whole aim. The whole colonization that was happening at that time, they were a little behind, potentially World War I. I'm not as advanced as Tim Snyder was. But he said that his eyes were fixed on Ukraine. And so, like, that's an interesting tidbit of history there in Ukraine. And also, like, I don't want to side rail it, but this is a book by Yuri Shylov, Ancient History of Iraq to Ukraine, 20,000 BC to 1000 CE. So it goes through a lot of history. The ancient history of Ukraine is incredible. And a lot of the spots where there are these burial mounds with like 63 caves underneath and petroglyphs that seem to be proto-Sumerian. So prior to Göbekli Tepe, the earliest civilization where agriculture comes from, seems to be right in this area. And I mean, there's something really interesting about like the ancient history of Ukraine, that also where the symbol of the swastika, and some even say the yin yang symbol, may have originated there. That the Russians, the Belarusians, the Slavs, the Aryans have an origin primarily in Ukraine.
It's some kind of sacred land that.
It's like a land bridge, that's for sure. It's flat and it connects Asia and Europe.
A lot of their most sacred spots were all along the Dnipro River, And also there's Kortitsa Island, which is in the Dnipro. And Tibetan monks claim their origin to be there in Ukraine and supposedly even have documentation to prove it. All in this book. But the thing is Yuri Shylov, an Anatoly Kafishin, leading archaeologist and Sumerologist, you can't find anything in English except this book. And I've tried to get in touch with him. I've tried to get in touch with Tim and Heather Lee Hooker that have translated some of the work. Nowhere to be found.
Yeah, the Black Sea port makes it such an amazing piece of land to control strategically. You can get into basically the oceans, mm-hmm. and you can get all over the continent.
Just a quick thing on the Black Sea. As I was researching a lot of this, I find Putin's face everywhere in all these ancient sites. He goes this submersible. Check out Putin in a submersible in the Black Sea, going down to the bottom of the Black Sea to find an ancient ship.
Interesting.
And there's, you'll see some of the images where.
Oh yeah.
What?
Oh my. What?
This dude.
What is happening?
You know, if he wasn't.
Swear his what is
ancient artifacts?
Hold on. What if Vladimir Putin was actually just like Nick Cage in National Treasure, and they're trying to frame him because he's going to uncover the secrets of Europe?
I did not want this power. I must free them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the way out to the Ural Mountains, all these ancient sites that apparently belong to the same core civilization prior to the Sumerians. Putin was everywhere. I found pictures everywhere visiting these ancient sites. So I don't know what it means. I'm just throwing it out there because it's food for thought.
Look, Hitler believes in a lot of occult crazy stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
And Putin could be motivated by weird stuff. No idea.
Yeah, for sure. That's a holy land. It's all about that area. And that maybe not all about it, but a big part of it is they wanted to be in the area where Jesus was. So a lot of times, it's culturally, there's an importance to people about being in a specific area.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely think World War III is an interesting topic, but it is Friday, so maybe we should actually tone things down and talk about
World War IV.
The next one. Yeah.
No, this one will be a bit more chill, and we'll have a good Friday night. Fox News reports Warner Brothers removes dialogue from Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore in China. The move comes after the studio received a request to remove lines referencing Dumbledore's gay relationship. My understanding is that that's like the main plot of the movie, but Brett, you saw it, so.
Saw it last night, yeah.
So spoiler alerts, I guess.
The secret is that Dumbledore is gay, which really wasn't.
No, wait. I'm sorry. The movie is called The Secrets of Dumbledore, and the secret is that he's gay?
Basically. But that secret was already spoiled years ago, because J.K. Rowling was kind of, when was that? Maybe 3 years ago?
Yeah.
That she was like, oh yeah, he's gay, and a couple of the other characters, are non-binary, whatever. Still, everybody hates her regardless. Mm-hmm. I think, here's the thing. I love Harry Potter. The movie was mediocre. It was subpar. And there were like three kind of gay points throughout it. Like it started off with some, and there were some like innuendos in like the middle part. And then at the end, like you see Dumbledore and Grindelwald kind of like have their moment of like, who will I love
like
now?
Kissing or?
No, they're just like, they're fighting, but because they are connected. I forget what happened in the first one, but they were like, blood is connected because they were lovers or something like that. They technically can't like destroy each other.
But that's crazy.
Yeah.
Because like in Harry Potter, there's like, how is it that no one who ever once loved another person ever fought until now?
Yeah.
Like you'd have to imagine that would come up quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, that's my ex. I can't fight her because, mm-hmm.
It reminded me of the same thing when like Voldemort and Harry are fighting and the wands like, combustible, yeah, fuse, that kind of thing. It was that story. It was a similar vibe. Mm. I don't know exactly what lines they removed, obviously, because I didn't watch the Chinese version. But
doesn't that make like the movie not work if they remove that from the movie?
I feel like I don't know what the other secret would be. It was like what would the whole plot be? It was just kind of like taking down Grindelwald, but there really was nothing going on.
Add like one scene at the end where after the movie ends, they're like, but wait. What was the secret Dumbledore?
Yeah.
And then he like pulls up his underwear and he's got roses. He's like, I'm wearing rose underwear. And they're like, oh, that's the secret.
Love it.
Yeah.
I guess there was another, because Dumbledore's brother is in it, so there is another Dumbledore, and he kind of has like a storyline where there is a secret that's not gay. So I technically think if you remove that, there is another Dumbledore.
They were referring to the non-main character Dumbledore.
Yes.
The ancillary character Dumbledore in the title of the film.
One of the things you mentioned that really bugs me is, I think Star Wars did it. They ripped off the Star Wars Episode IV, the first Star Wars ever made, with the, what was it, episode 7, 8, 9. It was 7. I think they just redid the story, but like in a different form.
It was a shot for shot remake, basically. So the Force Awakens is like a New Hope. Just
did it feel like they did that with Harry Potter? Was it different enough?
It was different enough. It was not as good. The magic was fantastic, though. I mean, it's interesting going back and like watching the original movies, and it's like I remember growing up being like, "Oh, this is so epic," and it's like, "Oh, well, it's kind of campy now."
Did that secret make it to like, "Oh, you kind of broke the fourth wall. This is too much about this world, not enough about that world."
You could definitely tell. One thing that I learned was that I'm pretty sure people can correct me if I'm wrong. This was the first Harry Potter film that was produced by Hollywood rather than British filmmakers. And I don't know. I mean, you could tell. There was something about it that I was just like, it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like it really sat in the universe. Maybe that was it, but it was...
Kind of like the last Matrix.
So J.K. Rowling's been doing these screenplays. And the books she wrote were fantastic. I love the Harry Potter series. Seems like these screenplays are just the worst trash I've ever seen and like just terrible movies.
Is she writing the screenplays?
I'm pretty sure she wrote the screenplays.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be funny if they just like, they announced the new series and it's effectively like Star Wars, a shot for shot remake of the Sorcerer's Stone or whatever. But at the end, it's like, the secret isn't the Sorcerer's Stone. It's just like some woke trash about the character was actually a white supremacist. Oh, you know.
Did you see the new Lord of the Rings movie on? I think it's on Amazon.
Yeah. It's a series, right?
The series. And I saw a screenshot showed like 170,000 downvotes and like 10,000 upvotes or something. And all these people comment on it. The video's on YouTube, and it's a quote from J.R.R. Tolkien that says, "Evil can never create anything new. It can only twist and destroy what's already been created."
That's interesting. The book The Master Switch goes into what Hollywood has been doing lately. You notice that almost everything's a remake.
Yeah.
It's this algorithm that's saying we know how to predict how continually making Spider-Man, continually making Batman and Wolverine and all that stuff. We know how to predict that. And I think that's also going to dovetail into these like, did you guys see what was that Ready Player One?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there was that racing game where there's Godzilla, and I think there's also King Kong. They're going to immortalize these like archetypal characters in these games to live forever. So they become like almost like these fictitious gods and goddesses from the movies. And I would just want to say one thing, like Voldemort, you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The two other names that are like in Russian similar to that is Vladimir and like Voldemir.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I keep hearing that relation between Vladimir and Voldemort.
So that was anti-Russian propaganda?
I have no idea.
J.K. Rowling, what did you do?
The new Superman
start trending
is
tomorrow morning.
Is that
really?
Right?
It's like the son of Superman, but he's like, he's a bi, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about doing that with James Bond, I think.
No, they were going to do a non-binary. The producer was like, they were like, we're not ruling out that Bond could be a non-binary.
Dude, I legit would love to make short films that, you know, in no way disparage anybody, but just make the point where it's like, we take James Bond, we do an action scene, and then in the end, the bad guy goes, "James, are you gay?" And he goes, "Yes." And that's the end of it. And it's like, I don't say that to, this is not a critique of the LGBTQ community. It's a critique of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Just like to predict how they would play these movies out, how they would do character development. Instead of being like, here's what I like. I like it when there's character development and you understand the character or you relate to a certain emotion. What I don't like is when they're just like, "Dumbledore's gay." Ooh, whoa, oh. It's like, okay, look, you know, if Dumbledore, as part of the plot, was in love with a guy, I'd be like, oh, okay, like, show me the motivation, help me understand it.
Mm-hmm.
If the secret of the movie is literally that Dumbledore likes men, and they've been hammering this point, I'm just like, guys, you didn't make a movie, you made, just make a commercial where it ends with Dumbledore saying he's gay.
A social point rather than good writing.
I was going to say, so from the like the back side of it, because I was an actor for 10 years, and then while I was in college, my whole plan had been to like then go into production and be a producer, and that's what I wanted to do. So I was working at an Academy Award winning production company. It was an indie company, and what I loved about it was that they only produced like deeply like character driven narratives, like brilliant stories. And during BLM, I was working with them around COVID as well, everything swapped. And instead of, I was on like the development team, so my part of my job was reading every single script submission that we would get and breaking it down. And it switched from, Brett, tell us about the character motivations and what makes these characters tick. What do we learn from it? What is the audience grasping at the end? Like the things that I think are important, to, do we have a Native American story? We don't have this. We scrapped like 70% of the projects that we had agreed to fund and do because they did not tick off enough of the boxes.
Did ownership change, or was...
There was just like, we're not going to produce it. So it was just like, went back to the screenwriters. Like, we can't do it. And then my job became not, let's like seek out these fantastic new writers, you know, read whatever comes in. It was like, you need to actively go find things that we can acquire that are like a trans, you know, female Native American story so that we can be... the social justice, whatever. I mean, it truly got so separated from what I think is the most beautiful part of entertainment, why I love entertainment, why I love, you know, movies and storytelling. It was truly just, you know, let's check a political box.
Was it like the ownership of the, when I asked about the ownership of the company that you worked at, did they change?
Oh, no,
was it
no.
Different people?
Nope.
They just started acting differently?
Yeah.
Social engineering. Could it,
you know what I was thinking is it possible that, you know, maybe in the past 10 or 15 years, a species of small slugs descended on Earth and crawled into people's ears and started to attach themselves and take over their minds and bodies. Mm-hmm. Is that one way it may have happened?
Yeah, what are those?
100%.
What are those little, space bears called? Those
yurks.
Little...
Water bears.
Yeah, water bears.
You guys ever read Animorphs?
No.
That when I was a kid, and I think they're called yurks.
I wonder
little,
if
little brain slugs take over your brain.
This kind of came up with Ben Shapiro. He was on the show a couple days ago. We did an afternoon show that's going to be on timcast.com, I think on Sunday.
No, it's going to be on, we'll put it on YouTube.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
On Sunday. Yeah,
and we were talking about just basically facts and how come sometimes you just can't convince people of things. And I think when someone's really agitated, like when someone's really emotionally calm, facts speak volumes. It's easy to pay attention and change your mind and, you know, change your thoughts. When you're agitated and crazy, almost nothing can make you stabilize. Like, no matter what comes up, it doesn't matter because you're freaking out. And if, like, this Wi-Fi is freaking... If all this, this energy that we're pouring through the air is, like, causing people to go nuts. Haywire. I don't know the word. Mm. And so they're not able to stay cool when things like... You were saying social engineering, when things like BLM... And it may even have contributed to the rise of... these social movements, but I think that's more like a CCP long war game, but that it's just overly impacting people because of the environment.
And that's why it's when people say, oh, we just need to, like, how do you convince people of, you know, how do you red pill them, whatever? It's like, just speak the truth. It's like, you can't just do that. Like, we can, you know, talk about facts all day long, but if you are not meeting people on their own turf, if you're not, you know, doing what Daily Wire does and creating culture, what Timcast does, all of this, if you are not, you know, communicating with them in a way that is relatable and tangible and engaging and, you know, is taking into account emotions, especially with the younger generations where we are, all hell is breaking loose at all time. Like, you cannot just convince people with facts alone. It has to be.
It's
not possible.
When you were growing up, did it feel like all hell was breaking loose when you were younger too?
Not at all, but I was in a very... I don't know, not contained environment, but I just didn't. I didn't go to public school. I was homeschooled for my entire life.
Yeah, that's great.
I went to public school for 3 years. I did kindergarten, first grade, maybe second grade, and then I did my freshman year of high school. And I was like, this place is awful, and I left. So as a result, I was not in the midst of all of that. I saw it when I got to college and while I was working in Hollywood, but I think I was so, you know, focused on my own internal whatever that it just didn't even faze me.
I wanted to go back to your point you said about, you know, facts and convincing people. I actually think that facts typically play a small role.
Yeah.
It's almost always emotion.
Yes.
So you want to make someone feel something. When I was doing, when I worked in fundraising for nonprofits, it's all emotion. If you go to someone and you'd say, you know, hi, I'd like to give you some facts about this catastrophe we're facing. Did you know that every day we do X, Y, and Z? And this is where they're going to be like, yeah, okay, thanks, have a nice day. No, you've got to, they say the first thing is create a sense of urgency. Ah, that's right. You have to convince them something is imperiled now. You can't just tell them the truth. You have to create.
Yep.
They would say create a sense of urgency. And you have to make them personally invested in it. You have to make them, there's several ways you can do it. There's things like, if we're going to talk about a faraway land, we have to make you to blame. Because why would you care about a faraway land? Oh, because it's your fault. If we're going to talk about an issue that does affect you, then you're the victim here. And you've got to help fight back. Like, we got to hold these people accountable. Mm-hmm. There's always a way to emotionally trigger someone, either through a demand for justice or through guilt. There's an emotion you're trying to target to make them take a certain action. I hated that industry.
It's what I was doing before this. A little, this is what I was doing this summer, was doing copywriting and, you know, what is it called? I forget. I worked for an organization that did it. But where you're writing, you know, the...
copy for pages.
Yep, and fundraising letters and all of that stuff. Like, there is basically a blueprint that you follow to get boomers to donate money to you.
And these blueprints are typically, they're formulaic. They're typically trash. But the formula is right. They just, what they do is they know the formula. There's actually a step-by-step process. So these companies will give you a sheet, and it'll give you five boxes, and it'll explain what each box needs to do, and then you write in those boxes, you know, how would you convey the idea? So it says, like, one, introduction. Two, sense of urgency. Three, problem. Four, solution. Five, pitch. And then you're like, you know, they say, follow this formula, write it out. A lot of companies will pre-write these things, hoping that if they hire 100 people, give them the script, 20 of them make it, the rest get fired a week later. And so, you know, I always thought those were trash because people don't, like, you'll see them on the street, like, hi, how are you doing? I'm so-and-so working with such-and-such. We have a huge problem, blah, blah, blah. It's all boring and formulaic. If you know how to read people, how they move, how they act, then this job becomes insanely easy, but it is almost always an emotional argument. You're either trying to convince them that you're cool and right and they should be on your side, trying to convince them that they should be guilty for being at fault for contributing to this, or that someone is screwing them over. You're never just saying, do you care about the environment? Yes. What's the most concerning thing to you? One of the problems we're fighting is deforestation. Are you concerned about the removal of trees in large numbers? People will be like, I'm sorry, I don't have time for this, and they'll leave. But if you say something like, when you go and you know, do X, Y, or Z, you are destroying every step of the way. I know you don't mean to do it. None of us do. But don't you think that you should, you know, help clean it up a little bit? Of course you should. I know you're a good person. Right. You don't, you're not the kind of person who's going to make a mess at someone's house and leave it there, would you? Of course not. Okay, credit card, please.
I wonder, and Ben, again, I ask you because you're one of my favorite people on earth. No, I'm just kidding. You're very intelligent.
Just kidding.
I don't play favorites. I'm talking about the past. Is there like some histological, you know, reason that we're so tuned into emotion?
Well, I don't think we're hardwired for fact. We're hardwired for story. Look at what we've done since time immemorial. Sat around, told stories. You could be like, I'm going to tell you the facts of my day. I hunted this thing and I hunted that thing. But it always ended with the shaman or the chief or somebody wrapping it into a mythological story. And there's a mythos that basically captures every generation, every civilization. There's some kind of narrative, like an overarching narrative. One big one from the Bible is that there will be a savior, and be on the lookout for that savior. And I think we are hardwired for narrative. And the thing about what's happening in the world today, I'll just say this. You don't have to get people, like, if I wanted to engage your, like, emotions to get you to do something in the world, and then to do that to large groups of people, destabilizing people's sense of equilibrium first, which is basic training, they did that with me. You get the people into a state of stress. It destabilizes their default mode network. It almost puts them into a psychedelic suggestible like state. And then what seems to be the context, things that I'm not making you do, but I'm kind of filling in the blanks of what's happening contextually, will create a world view where, like, oh shit, because of everything you just said, I realize what I have to do. And that's setting up the set and setting, destabilizing you and suggesting and planting seeds, not being overt and on the nose.
Let's just, going off what you said, this is what I thought of. Let me tell you about the hunt I went on. So I went out into the woods. I had my rifle with me. There were some issues. We saw the buck. I lined it up. We got it. It was great. Big guy. Let's try another version. So there I was. I'm walking through this mud. I see the beast. Massive.
Dim the lights.
I get my rifle ready. I'm jammed. It notices me. I take the shot. We got it. We go over there. This thing was magnificent, beautiful, the biggest you've ever seen. Which would people prefer to hear?
Oh,
right?
The second was
right. You're driving fantastic. Emotion. You're trying to create a sense of, you know, what's happening. So storytelling. You know, I think about these. You know, we play D&D or Magic the Gathering or whatever, and you've got these games based on goblins. And I'm like, you know, why there are stories about goblins? because some guy went to go sell beans at the market. And while he's walking through the woods, he comes across some ugly dude who's yelling about something or other. And he's like, everybody's always coming here and messing things up. You, this is my road. I've been working on it. It's like, get out of here, dude. And he walks away. When he goes back home, he doesn't say some guy yelled at me. He goes, so I'm walking through the woods and a vile creature emerges with a crooked nose and pointed ears. And he snarls. And I'm like, back beast. And I draw my blade. And so people tell these stories. Someone writes it down and draws pictures. And they're like, wow. And then we imagine these vicious monsters and these giant, you know, there I was fighting the dragon. And it's like a small lizard.
You know, Homo florensis, that hominid. I think those are maybe where goblin, the fantasy goblins come from. Those little humans. Mm-hmm. And they were, I think, they historically would eat human children. Like they would steal them.
They found
and
some new ones a couple of years ago. They would steal children. Those recent ones they found.
Whoa. Yeah, mm-hmm. This is what I've heard. They found new... Yeah.
Mythological stories of small people like the Menehune in Hawaii, and also like many of the islands that apparently built all the structures before the regular stature people would get there. There's stories of little people and giants everywhere.
Oh, yeah,
Native Americans have a lot of stories.
I think they're called the giants.
Right, but like cannibalistic giants, Native Americans from Pennsylvania all the way down to Tennessee, actually.
Say that there's cannibalistic giants?
Giants, yep.
Like, are they weird, large humans that are kind of naked and can only be killed by slicing the nape of their neck?
No, but go on.
Did you know what I was referencing?
No.
You left. Oh, it's Attack on Titan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but you left and I was like, are you familiar? All the guys in the chat are going to be like, but I guess not. So guys, calm down.
I also think you have a good voice for story. You should do some voiceover like that.
I'm Dr. Fauci in Freedom Tunes.
Yeah. I love it.
But now that Fauci's out of the news cycle, I'm out of work, man.
Well, I think this is a great opportunity for you to start storytelling again.
Well, I asked Seamus if he would let me voice Nancy Pelosi on his show, and I don't think he wants to. But she talks like this. Like her mouth is falling from her face. I think Donald Trump... You know, I definitely go over the top with it on purpose because I don't like her.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe we are in the psychological world. I think it's a storytelling era where, and you're an actor. I was an actor, Ben. I mean, you're a performer.
I went through acting classes mainly to learn how to write.
Yeah.
Tim, creator, performer.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, like, I growing up as an actor, I would get a lot of crap, especially from like family members who were like, you're too smart to be, you know, being in entertainment, doing whatever. Like, well, everything that we're saying that we are, you know, that humanity is inherently, you know, narrative-based. I mean, everything we learn from stories. That's why, I mean, we spend however many hours of our week, you know, consuming movies and television shows. Everything that we learn is subconsciously, you know, coming from the stories that we are watching. And it's so important. And so it always disappointed me when people were going, well, why are you doing that? It's like, well, I feel like this is the most important work that I could be doing if I'm, you know, leveraging my craft, basically, in a way that is meaningful and that I think is aligned with my values. There's nothing better, because that's the way that people learn. That's the way that you change minds. That's why it's like, I don't not want to give up on Hollywood, but not want to give up on entertainment and the power that it holds.
I think what Ian was trying to say is that when I tell you this next story, instead of saying Joe Biden mocked for shaking hands with thin air after speech, I should go, so there he was.
Oh,
Biden turned to his right. In his mind, the hallucination of a strong man reaching out to shake his hand. Biden reached, but there was nothing.
But the best part of this is Stars and Stripes is on top of all of that happening. With the band playing it.
Oh,
great.
Yeah, yeah. Huh? So Joe Biden claims that he was a professor at what, UPenn?
Yes.
Is that it?
A full professor.
He never even taught one class there.
Mm-mm.
Yo, is like... What if the conspiracy theory, you know, the Biden conspiracy theory?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard this?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that he's not actually Joe Biden. He's a replacement called Biden. And like the real story is that Joe Biden got plastic surgery and looked kind of different.
Mm-hmm.
But people compare Joe Biden before and Joe Biden now. And it's like,
it is creepy.
It is. But he's older and he got plastic surgery. That's what it looks like. But so there's the conspiracy theory. So like he's Biden, not Biden. That's what they call him or whatever. But, maybe he's like, this guy was a professor at UPenn, and now he's old and doesn't realize he's not, or whatever.
That's ridiculous.
Well, no, but in all seriousness, Joe Biden tried to shake hands with thin air. I genuinely think he may have been hallucinating. Mm-hmm. I really do mean it. I'm wondering if, or my question is, how could he possibly mistake himself as a professor at university?
Yeah, you were explaining this, Brett. Like, he was, he actually was, got an honorary degree.
So UPenn paid him, and this is not the first time that he's claimed this, because I was reading a Daily Caller article about it that came out in 2019. And in 2019, he had already been proclaiming that he was a full professor. But what happened was that UPenn paid him a little over $700,000 to be a Benjamin Franklin honorary professor, something like that. And basically, all he had to do was show up around the campus, be sort of a figurehead, wander around. I don't know where that money went. Who knows what he did with it? Maybe Hunter has it. We'll see. But
he's great at wandering around.
Exactly. I mean, he's fantastic at it. Maybe that's all he thinks that professors do. But he was paid by the university, but he was far from being any kind of professor. But in his mind,
he has a history of lying. Like, he's a plagiarist in 88. Mm-hmm. I brought that up before when he ran for president.
When he rubs his nose or the eyebrow, he's lying.
Just tell.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
If you watch his videos, yeah.
You're a Biden whisperer. I see.
I spend a lot of time watching his videos on the internet.
As an actor, I do the same thing. You just study people and watch them move.
Well, how many videos do we need of Joe Biden wandering around, not knowing where he's going, not knowing what he's talking about? Is it a mockery? Like, at what point is it? Yeah. Is it like, how many people have been talking about it since before? Even like his mind is not going to hold up. It feels like a mockery.
It's elder abuse.
You know,
like he's mocking us.
The whole thing. It kind of feels like
he could be
making
trolling
a mockery
people.
Of the
you
United States.
You think I'm broken? And he acts like it.
Like as the archetypal figurehead of the United States at the end of our lifespan. There's this mockery, this guy that can't even keep a sentence together. I mean, I'm talking metaphorically. Obviously, there's probably a more nuanced explanation to it.
I think, and when I say sick, I just mean that it seems like his mind has been clouded, or he's getting old, he's losing, like, I don't know if it's Alzheimer's, onset dementia, whatever, but a sick society will create a sick leader. And I'm not, sickness is a vague word, but this is an example of, like, people voting for something they hate because they hate something else more. You do not. A healthy society puts the smartest and the best in power. I don't understand. This is just arrangement. Mm-hmm.
Well, they hated Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And they were willing to take the craziest, laziest, out of his mindiest. Mm-hmm. So this is what we get. I don't think Joe Biden will be able to run in 2024.
Absolutely not.
I mean, Ben was saying that they're going to strap him to a gurney, but I'm like, come on. Yeah, I guess. But even that's not going to work.
Maybe he'll run and then try and make somebody else look good.
You know what his slogan would be? Tuner on a shabbat of pressure.
Or Nexnoresin.
Yeah.
Or and Batacalf here. He has a new one. Remember when he said the United States can be summed up in one word? And he said, Asuma Feminimenea. Or something like that. I didn't
My favorite is just, we're back.
We're back.
We're back. That's the only thing he can actually say coherently is, we're back.
Oh, he could say, come on, man.
That's it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look
yeah,
fat. Yeah.
It's going to get real.
Mm-hmm.
He's good at saying Putin caused inflation.
Or go, yeah. Or go get him. That was the end of his State of the Union.
His catchphrase is, it's not my fault, it's Putin's fault.
Yeah. It's not my fault. Period.
Everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He like slips on a banana peel. Oh, Putin.
Did you guys see that he got shot on by a bird?
Yes.
Yeah, and everybody was like, oh, he's going to blame.
Tim made a video earlier, I think, analyzing it. What'd you come up with?
So Snopes says he wasn't pooped on. It was actually corn. Or a corn. It said it was
corn
byproduct.
Corn pop. Oh my gosh.
Oh, it was. A literal corn pop.
He was standing next to a big pile of corn
at
an ethanol plant where they take corn and turn it into ethanol. And so they said it clearly was corn. And when they show it in slow motion, you can see it hits him and it does break apart like bits and not goop. However, here's the issue. So, the New York Post said it was bird poop. Snopes and many other outlets said it was corn. And I'm like, no one actually knows. None of you can prove it. The White House claims it was corn. You don't know that. So here's what I say. The splatter on his lapel. The corn retains. It looks like if it was corn, and it might be, it's in a viscous matter of some sort. Because if powdered corn ball hit you, the whole thing would break apart. If there was a wet ball with corn in it, it would hit you, and then corn bits would splatter down, but it would retain its splatter shape because there's a viscous material holding it together. I say it's possible that there was a bird in there that ate a bunch of the corn and then pooped it out on him, and it was in its poop. Or the simple answer is, why are fact checkers claiming they know what it is when they don't? By all means, say, we don't know if it was bird poop. I'm fine with that. Something fell on him, sure. But then they're like, fact check, Biden wasn't pooped on. I'm like, You didn't fact check. That's your opinion.
But yeah, because you could, like, zoom in on the photo, and it's like, it doesn't look like typical bird poop. It's not, like, white. It does, now that you said the corn, I hadn't seen that, it does kind of look more like that. I mean, I got pooped on here the other day, on my eyebrow.
That's but they called it...
It does not look like that.
They called it a corn byproduct, because they couldn't even say it was corn, byproduct.
It was like partially digested corn. I imagine maybe. Birds can't digest it fully or something.
Or they ate too much, like that giant mound, a bird could have just eaten until it got sick and barfed on them for all
maybe,
I know.
Maybe, yeah.
Or maybe it was a mother bird carrying food around to bring back to the babies in the nest.
Oh, hey. Yeah.
You know, I had a moment. I was walking up to the front door of the Daily Wire building, and as I'm walking, I'm about 5 feet from the wall in the door, and I hear a like a splatter.
Oh, no.
And I look, and I see a little white splotch. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that was close. And I look up, and there was a little bird butt. Right over the edge. It was just really awesome. I could see, like, there's a little bird standing there and his butt hanging over him. Like, he just took a dump.
What animals have you guys been crapped on? I'll go first if you want.
Well, bird, last week, well, no, it was like 2 weeks ago. I did a hit on Ben's show and I was walking back and it went right there. And I was like, man, it's large.
Yeah, I took the bird and the snake. The snake was interesting because it was like this white stuff just came out of the bottom of it on the knee. It's kind of neat.
Human babies.
Oh, yeah.
So I get pooped on often. And rabbits.
Rabbits.
Oh, yeah.
Rabbits.
Which actually isn't, I mean, they're relentless shitters, but I mean, like, it's just these little dry fertilizer.
Yeah, but you know, they also eat their own poop.
Yeah, they do.
They don't really
their own babies, which
they don't
do
really,
well.
they don't really eat their own poop. What they're eating is, when the rabbits eat plant matter, it has to go through their system more than once. So sometimes poop comes out. And sometimes it looks like poop, but it's actually just partially digested plant matter. Mm. They turn around and eat it again. Yeah, rabbits. Wow. People gotta understand, rabbits are not pets.
Nope,
it's crazy to me that people like.
Well, they freak me out too.
Yeah,
they're
white ones with the red eyes.
Oh yeah. Albino? Are they considered albino?
I don't know. I think so. Weird.
They're delicate. They have delicate systems. Mm. You can't really bathe them. Like, they're not great pets. Like, people get them for their kids.
They chew everything.
But they're high maintenance. Mm-hmm. Get them a guinea pig.
Yeah, well, these rabbits attack our feet. They're not smart, you know. Like, I mean, they're fun actually, but like, it'll be dark and I'm walking through the house and they'll just run straight for my feet, not realizing like I could crush you, dude, on accident.
Good. What do they think it is? Not that you know.
But they're super playful. Like, if I run away, they'll run after me. You know, and my kids love just running across the house. And
do you get them fixed?
No, we just have two boys.
Oh, okay.
But they still hump each other like crazy.
Really?
It's funny to watch.
I had some rabbits, and you know, we understood, you know, their warning. They good rabbit, you know, dealers or pet shops will explain to you like how you take care of the rabbits. So when I was in Miami, we actually had a whole room with just two rabbits in it. It wasn't that big of a room, but it was like, it was a decently sized room. The rabbits had the room to themselves. They poop everywhere, and we'd feed them, and then we'd clean it and stuff. But they started getting into it because it was a boy and a girl. And so it didn't really work out because, you know, rabbits are. Mm-hmm. And the girl, when she didn't want it, she would jump like 8 feet in the air. Because we put up a big barrier. So the room was like a sunroom. It was like, it was a room, but the door was just always open. So we put a big thing in front of it, and she would just straight over it. And one day, I go in there, and she's gone. We find her upstairs hiding because the dude, rabbit, was like, you know, he was oppressing her.
Wow.
Yeah, good for it's a nice way of saying it. What I like about it is like there's a lot of fertilizer, and I've gotten seriously into the importance of topsoil and just the microbes in the soil. And there's like farmers around Tennessee down in Summertown that are like within 6 years going to have like several feet of topsoil on their farm, like really doing it incredibly. So, but they have like guineas, water buffalo, different cows, like tons of different animals, and they're doing it right. So that's why I don't mind seeing the bunny crap everywhere. I just go around, sweep
bunny
it
crap.
Up. And, yeah.
You know what this Biden getting pooped on thing makes me think of? The Bernie Sanders when the bird landed on his podium.
Oh, yeah, that was that. And it was like a magical moment, people.
Yeah, and then here's the other magical moment.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so we have, you guys probably know it, Chicken City.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And those things poop.
Oh my God.
Everywhere. So what I love about them is that they're smart enough not to drink poop water, but they're not smart enough not to poop in their water. So it's like you hand them water, they'll drink it, they'll turn around, just take a dump right in it, and look at it and go like, I'm not drinking that. Well, it's like, well, you did it, dude. But when you go into the chicken coop, I always tell people, because when people come over, they'll be like, oh, can I come check them out? I'll be, yeah, but your feet are going to be covered, caked in just chicken crap. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, you wash them off afterwards, or you can just not go in there. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, chickens, they poop.
Is it safe enough to put plastic bags on your feet?
I was just thinking about those painter ones.
Go with it. Just be one with when I go home to my family's farm, it's like I know for a fact that it's like I'm not coming out unscathed.
It must be good for your biome to be like, was it Joey Salatin, I think is his name? Is it Joel Salatin? He's a farmer.
He's
all about getting in there with the pig feces and like it, how it enhances your biome and your immune system.
Mm. He'd be
I think
great
I'm
guest.
Healthier because I was, you know, playing in the dirt as a kid.
I am and too. Yeah, for sure.
Because I wasn't a Purell kid.
Purell kid.
Yeah.
It actually help with allergies. Mm-hmm. Early exposure helps with allergies. You just got to be careful with like the parasite cycles. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But actually having a diversity of animals, they'll eat each other's crap and break the parasite cycles as well.
Mm-hmm. Weird. That's weird.
Yep. If you have them roaming around the same ground, they'll break the parasite cycles. And also keeping quail is really incredible because they don't make a ton of noise. Their eggs are really dense, nutrient dense, and they don't make much noise. So you can be in kind of like an urban environment and you won't have that noise all the time.
Chickens.
I think I need some quails.
Yeah. That sounds awesome. Chickens are noisy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. We got Roberto, and then we got Roberto Jr. He had a kid, and they just yell nonstop.
The ladies are cool. The dudes are loud.
No. I think the ladies are actually worse.
Really?
So, yeah, the roosters are loud, but the girls just complain all day. They're not really complaining.
They complain
they're
to each other.
They're actually really happy, but they go around and they go like, bark, 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 bark.
Gossiping.
Yeah.
And you'll hear, like, I'll hear the cons. So it's one thing to hear a cock-a-doodle-doo once in a while, or the crowing. It's another thing when for like 30 minutes you're hearing, bark, 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 bark.
Yeah, what is, are they laying an egg when they do that?
So typically it's probably more than one chicken and they're doing the egg song.
What is that?
Yeah. They lay an egg and then they sing.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever had pigs?
No, I would love to. Have you?
Well, I will. So my mother's birthday was in February, and her birthday present for me was a pet pig. Not a pet pig, but it's out there. But yeah,
teacup
I have
pig.
What?
Teacup pig?
No, she's going to be a full size. Her name's Nora. But I got her. She was like 2 months old. I was here already. I had her delivered to my mom, had it all set up, and I don't know how big she is now. Her name's Nora. That animal, I mean, so loud. If she does not want to be touched, she's super sweet, and she like comes when you call her. She's like a dog. Aww. But if you touch her in a weird way, I mean, it's like
squealing.
All hell. I mean, the loudest thing on the farm by like a long shot. And she has all those birds and everything. But truly,
Let's go to Super Chats. If you have not already, Super Chat and send us your questions. Also, smash that like button. Subscribe to this channel. Share the show if you really do want to help out with that grassroots marketing. We're already bigger than CNN Plus, so all right, mission accomplished, I guess. But share the show anyway and become a member at TimCast.com. We're already bigger than CNN Plus, but you join anyway. Next, we'll be bigger than, I don't know, Fox Nation. Yeah, Fox Nation. Yeah, we'll beat them. All right. All right, send us your super chats. Let's read what you guys got. All right. Woot do for you says, currently driving up from Georgia to see you guys tomorrow. You're a hero to me, Tim. Well, I really appreciate it. I think the current plan is that we're going to be at Redneck Riviera, downtown Nashville, from 1:30 to 2:30. I think we'll
short
all be
stop,
there.
Yeah.
Short jamming shows, some music.
Short stop. Yeah, so I think a good hour is enough to get a handful of songs in for everybody. I might play two. We'll see what happens. And then we got a hard stop to get out of there by 2:30. We got to be in the car and be on the road because I got to make it back to West Virginia to get back to work. All right, Colin, your buddy, says, we're writing stories for the chickens in Chicken City. Roberto is the mayor of Chicken City after being a weather vane model and having an affair with Margaret Hatcher, Mayor Roberto 2024. And Roberto Jr. is his illegitimate son who's come to usurp his role.
Scandal.
Yep.
Oh my.
You're not my father.
In reality, though, you know, Roberto Jr. is starting to impose himself on Roberto's ladies. Oh and my. Roberto's not having it. The craziest thing is that, you guys, chickens do not have the same genetics as us. So they inbreed. They do. It's called line breeding. You're not supposed to do it too much, but it happens. And they don't care. They do not have familial relationships. So, like, Roberto sees his daughter, and Roberto Jr. sees his mom, and they're just like, don't care. They just that's how it goes. Oh,
dinosaurs do that too, I guess. Then, or
yeah,
chickens are dinosaurs.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always wondered how dinosaurs actually do it.
There you go.
You well, look at those huge tails. How did they mount one another?
Don't know.
It's just a weird,
very aggressively. I would imagine.
I don't spend a lot of time trying to figure that out. But,
yeah. All right, Clef the Misfit says, "Hey Tim, you said you're a Twitter shareholder too. Why don't you reach out to other shareholders and launch a class action lawsuit since Twitter violated their fiduciary duty?" I have 22 shares, and I bought them after Elon Musk bought because I was like, this is a good investment. I mean, Elon Musk would be a great leader for the company. That's fantastic. So after I heard, I was like, all right, I'll go on Twitter and see what's up, and I bought some. But I may have had one before, and I think I just bought them. Now it's like if Elon pulls out of Twitter because of this shady dealing, like I'm going to end up losing a bunch of money. I'll be kind of pissed. But I'm not doing this for any kind of lawsuit or anything. I have a brokerage account or whatever with like $1,000 in it. And I was like, oh yeah, Twitter, I guess. Why not? I wasn't really thinking. I don't want to be involved in any of that stuff. If I was like a legitimate big investor, then definitely. Cause I think they're screwing over the shareholders. No doubt. Cause they're nuts. Maybe everybody should, you know, buy in. All right. Daniel K says, your honest coverage of Florida has been much appreciated. Tampa, a Democrat stronghold in Florida, has a green beret running for Congress, Jay Collins. It's a long shot flipping Tampa red, but I feel like Collins has a real chance at it. It would be great to see him on your show. We will take a look. Mm-hmm. All right, let's grab some super chats as the race cars keep going. Double A says, Femme Shapiro doesn't look the same without her leg up on the chair.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Oh,
is
there
that,
you go.
Oh, yeah.
That's
how
you, my,
that's
my look.
That's how I sit, too. That's awesome.
Comfortable, yeah.
It's the knee.
I like this
love
a lot.
It.
Oh, wow. What's this? Brad Pitt's junk says,
Oh, my.
Congrats to Styx on the birth of his daughter earlier this week. Hope you guys can have him on next time he's stateside. Wow. Yes, congratulations. Styx is fantastic. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
Always been a big fan of Styx, Hex, and Hammer. Stephen White says, Tim and crew, the trending movies on Netflix are war movies. Saving Private Ryan, The Imaginary Game. It's almost like they're trying to push World War III. Mm. What did I get recommended? I've been watching DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and then season 6, I just stopped watching it. That show just like, man, they jumped the shark.
Oh.
Yeah. It was fun. It's like a DC superhero show, but now it's like, turns out one guy's an alien, and now there's a bunch of aliens, and I'm just like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. This is stupid. Yeah, it's just dumb. Uncle Ulysses says, Ian, you're the man. Keep being you. Wanted to shout out a local podcast about the supernatural and conspiratorial. Coin Doc Pro, Conspiracy Indoctrination Program. Give it a shot. Oh, is it Cohen? Coin? Give it a shot, see if you like it. Cool, cool.
Thanks, man.
All right, let's grab some more. King Fo Panda says, found Brett on TikTok. This is my first ever super chat. I've been subbed for so long. It told me I couldn't chat because I subbed while watching child content. Whoa, yeah.
Whoa,
had to unsubscribe to chat, spin the UFO.
Oh, so if you have a child, if you have like under 13 content up in one window, YouTube won't let you subscribe to over 18 shows?
Weird.
Maybe that's strange.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to make sure Chicken City is for adult only.
Oh,
because we have short chicken gags that we're making. And we were here with Seamus, and so we recorded one that's really funny, and it's basically, it's not meant for, it's like maybe like 6 to 9 years old is probably the where it would be if it was like a kid's show, but it's the kind of jokes where, you know, an adult would like it too. But then as we were like ad-libbing, we did one really dark one where it was, you know, Roberto, he's got a daughter, you know, chickens don't really have, you know, they don't care. And so it's about line breeding, which is when fathers and daughters and sons and mothers breed. Ooh. And I put it up on Instagram, but for some reason it wouldn't.
What?
It was shadow banned. Like, nobody could see it. And I was like, well, it is a particularly dark. Like, Roberto was drunk, and he was like, where are you? And I'm like, we don't show anything. It was just, like, line breeding. And, like, a card pops up and explains how this happens. They wouldn't allow it. And so I'm like, maybe it shouldn't be, you know, like, the darkest of humor at all. And maybe we should just stick to the gag humor. The gag humor joke we have is just Roberto screaming and running around, flipping out.
I
like,
thought
kids would like it.
It was like Adult Swim 2007.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. Also, the first few, like, what, like, not right, words. He's drunk.
Like a barking, barking.
Drunk mumbling from a chicken.
Oh my gosh.
And he's drinking mealworm IPA.
Yes, so good.
Yeah. Kent, our animator, oh Kent Welling, made that. I put it up on Instagram. They wouldn't let me. And I was like, maybe it's because we say bitch in it. So I'll censor that. So now he says, you, You know, so I don't know. But maybe I'm like, maybe we should just stick to the stuff that's like more family friendly. The one that it was funny because I was talking to Kent and I was like, hey, here's the sound that, like, the voiceover stuff we recorded. Don't make that one. Like, I think we are just, you know, being vulgar. And I'm like, make the one where it's just like the kids show where they're like counting how many eggs they have and then Roberto screams and runs around going nuts. And I'm like, it's just silly kid stuff. And he's like, you got it. And then he messages me, sends the clip, and he says, it has been made.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I'm like, this one looks a little shorter than it should be, and I played it, and I was just laughing.
There's got to be a network brilliant. To run that on. There's got to be.
Instagram wouldn't let it go up. I don't know. They
just fun chicken
maybe
packs.
Fox.
Rumble.
I think it's too hot for Fox.
Rumble.
Pay for it to run as an advertisement.
That's the one.
That's it.
After 10
it's
p.m.
really
only.
Good.
All right. Let's... Adrian Contreras says, I'm not going to smash the like button, Tim, but I will tickle it ever so gently.
Oh,
I'm still pushing for Glenn Jacobs on the show, too. Can we make that happen? We'll take a look. C. Santos says, my fiance is Gen Z, and she can't stand the content that Brett makes. She thinks it's overcritical and bullying. I've been trying to get her to understand the culture war that's happening, but no luck so far. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing about the challenge of the culture war is that If someone walked up to you and slapped you in the face, and then you were like, guys, I'm really angry. This guy's been slapping me in the face. Let me explain to you. People are going to be like, why are you being so mean to that guy? Like, I don't even know who that guy is. Like, they'll assume that your criticism of legitimate things is mean or wrong. And it's like, bro, I'm not the person who's throwing paint in someone's face. You know, like, they're the ones throwing paint on us.
It's funny to hear that, though, because I do get criticism for being too empathetic to people, though, from people on the right who are like, I did an episode about Emma Watson, and there was something I was doing with Demi Lovato, who was like, I still really like her music, like, I think she's fantastic, like, that kind of thing. People were like, how dare you say nice things about her? And it's like, we're still human beings. You can still criticize people and the ridiculous things that they do and find humor in it,
I wouldn't say bullying. I've been watching your stuff, and, like, I mean, honestly, like, it's, you definitely have your style, but I think it's from certain perspectives, like, you have people saying that you're being too empathetic and other people saying you're bullying.
Well, if you're on the internet, you can't please everybody. So it has to be kind of like, okay.
With comments, this is like, Joe Rogan would tell people don't read the comments, but you actually have a show called The Comments Section, and I love reading the comments. Just don't take it personally.
Exactly,
any of it, the good stuff or the bad stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard not to take the good stuff personally when they're like, you're so awesome. I love when you did this thing. And you're like, yeah, me too. But don't take it personally, because then you start to take the negative stuff personally.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well. Here's Terry. Terramoto Jr. says, Brett Cooper, thanks for selling me on homeschooling on your Instagram for when I have kids. Already hated public schools before it was cool to hate them, so it wasn't difficult, but your stuff on homeschooling is what made me decide that was the solution.
Amazing. That actually makes me very happy.
That's awesome.
Homeschooling.
Love
it.
Love it.
So good. Wouldn't have changed a thing.
Daniela Sanchez says, hey guys, I want to audition for the Daily Wire's upcoming productions as an actor. How can one find out how to audition? If I have to relocate to Nashville, I will do it. Have an awesome day, guys. Well, Brett, you run casting for Daily Wire, right?
Yeah, sure. That's my other job. I get a lot of people. We have a lot of people that DM me asking for jobs or like, how do you find, you know, careers and that kind of thing. I actually have no idea how the casting process goes for the films, but I will say, if you're trying to work at Daily Wire, you can go to our career page. It's not too difficult to find. And it is funny when I have people being like, oh, where do I find it? I was like, you can type in Daily Wire careers. If you really are motivated to come work for us, I promise you will find a way. Mm. Yeah.
Ken Pittsburgh says, we are already in the metaverse. When we die, the carny will take off your VR glasses. You'll ask how long you're in there, and he'll point to a sign that says $5 for 5 minutes. Chicken City!
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like Rick and Morty when they go to Blitz and Chits. Have you guys seen that one? Have you seen it? So he's like, let's go play Roy. And you sit down and you put this headset on, and then you go limp, and then you live an entire life as some guy named Roy. And they're like, they're watching Morty play. And then after he comes out, he's like, where am I? I'm Morty. And Rick is like, you went back to the carpet store? Jeez, let me play. And then everyone's watching him, and they're like, whoa, he's taking this guy off the grid. He doesn't have a social security number.
Oh,
yeah, that was
amazing.
Funny. He's taking him off the grid. Roy. All right, seriously, JK says, the other day I tweeted at Elon Musk to buy all of Twitter and then immediately shut it down. I have not heard back from him yet, but I'll keep you all posted. I mean, if Elon Musk doesn't get in, it's doomed anyway.
Yeah.
If Elon Musk gets the company, he'll fix it. So you know. 3D Pyromaniac says Brett should go on Mug Club and play newest gender pronouns now.
What is that?
Is that Crowder?
Yeah, it's Crowder. Yeah.
Love it. I'll be at Blaze next week.
Cool beans. Yeah. Nice. Awesome.
That's in Austin, right?
Dallas.
Dallas.
Yeah.
I was there. How did I get that wrong? All right. Enslaved said, Tim, it would be awesome if you checked out music. My new album is called Defund the Politicians. Search Enslaved Ones on here or any streaming service. Hey, very man, cool, always interested in people making culture and succeeding with it, so. Zoidberg says, I constantly promote free the code, but that's no guarantee that the open source code is the same code that's running on the live system. Interesting. Mm. Yeah. Shinobi Strongside, Ian, I have that time dilations almost every night. It was so bad, I had to go on disability. Living whole lives in one night, eventually I learned how to manage it. Time is definitely illusion.
Oh, interesting. Whoa.
Yeah, I would love to find out how you managed it, too. That was very cool.
I wonder if that's like a something that a lot of people have experienced. Like, if it's actually got a name. Because that'd be a wild disorder to have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, each night living a full life.
Jeez.
That'd be pretty wild.
Check this out. Dragon Lady says, Deep Space 9 episode, Hard Time. O'Brien lives a 20-year prison sentence that's implanted in his brain in a few hours. Causes a bunch of psychological problems afterward. Great episode. Crazy.
Very cool.
Yeah, what if all this is right now? Our lives are actually a metaverse. We're all 3 years old. And the point is to give you a full life of experience and wisdom so that you come out, you're three, and you're like, whoa. And they're like, we wanted to make sure that before you started, you knew what you were doing. Well, so
I will eat less sugar as a teenager.
See? See? You're going to come out, you're going to be three, and you're going to be like, I'm alive. What am I? And they're going to be like, what did you learn? Like, what? What did you learn? I'm not going to eat sugar when I'm a teenager. You pass. Keep going.
That's great.
Someone else is like, I want donuts. Back in.
No.
Ben made
that's a return.
You can eat sugar.
No redemption.
I was saying, put them back in. You got to go around again. Yeah. All right. King Deem says, Tim, we already have the metaverse for years. It's called VR Chat. The videos about journalists living in the metaverse for days are not original at all. There's literally dozens of videos of the same kind. What Facebook did is not relevant. No, I understand. So when we talk about metaverse, it's typically, you know, in a reference to the coming brain implants where they stick the metal into your neck and then you actually are in the metaverse.
Mm. Through a neural net.
Yeah. Mm. See, I feel like most guys would say yes instantly.
Yeah,
I want to fight a dragon, bro.
Yeah. I've been seeing videos of people going into the metaverse. They'll be like, I was in the metaverse for 30 days, and there's like a YouTube video about it. And they said, one guy was saying that a lot of people in the metaverse just look into mirrors and stare at themselves.
What?
You'll see groups of people just staring at themselves in a mirror in the metaverse, like at their character.
Weird. Did you ever see that thing where they put VR headsets on people, a man and a woman? They stood in front of each other, but their VR headsets were each other's camera. So the man, they would like both of you look down slowly, and then they would be like, now feel your body, and they would feel their body the same way, but the dude was seeing the woman's body, and the woman was seeing the dude's body, so it's like when you touch your hands, you feel like you're in the other person's body.
Oh, it's so weird.
Yeah. Ooh. Creepy.
Yikes.
Yep. And then they have like touch your leg, and so you feel like, because you're seeing in the lenses the other body.
That's mirror neurons going... Yeah, that's what allows when you see somebody crying or somebody fall and scrape their knee or something like that, your mirror neurons empathize to the point where you can feel it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I think the illness can communicate like that sometimes, too.
In in skateboarding, whenever you watch slam videos, you can feel the slam. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Like, I'll watch someone hit the ground and I feel the jolt in my body. I'm like, oh, man. Don't like that. Crazy, right?
Yeah.
You know? They say that if you don't experience that like sociopaths don't experience that phenomenon. So it's like how they test for it. They'll show a video of someone getting hurt in some way, and if you don't have a response, they think, you know, something's there.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I can't stand how I'm like, I turn on Instagram and too many videos are slams. I'm like, dude, if I see a slam coming, I'm getting out. Cuz I'm going to you don't feel it, but you feel it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You get that feeling. All right. Let's grab some more super chats. What do we got? D Stuff says, have you guys heard of Vince Dow and the American Populist Union? He's someone I've been a fan of for a little while. You should have him on the show. Keep up the good work. I do not know who that is.
I'm going to write that down.
He's a good guy. I know him from PragerU.
Oh, very
cool.
He's
a really sweet
cool.
kid. Yeah. Cool. Not kid, I guess. He's he's a little younger than me. But yeah.
Party Hard Jay says, Twitter moderation has gotten so bad that I got suspended today for asking you if Redneck Riviera would be open to the public tomorrow.
What?
It was labeled hateful conduct, and my appeal was denied. Email you guys screenshots. Wow. Because Redneck
nuts.
Probably.
Wow.
That's
so,
weird.
Here's the plan. Redneck Riviera exists. It is John Rich's venue. We have no formal plan with the venue other than John Rich owns it. And he said, let's go jam. And I said, okay. So if it's open, it's open. If it's not, I have no idea what's going on.
But 1:30, that's the plan. 1:30 p.m.
Yep. Yeah, Ian's going to headline. It's all, we're going to put banners up for him.
I'll be screaming.
Ian will play some songs, I guess. You're going to be there, Ben?
I'll play something. Yeah.
Carter will be there. He's, mm-hmm. you know, from Timcast. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone will be able to get in as much as they want to play. I'll probably only play a couple songs. I might even have to leave early just because we got to get on the road. But actually, no, probably not.
You going?
Oh, maybe I'll come.
Oh, wow.
Don't
I'll
put
do
you
a
on
jig.
The spot.
Yeah, yeah. I'll do a jig.
You play
do
music?
It, yeah. No, I sing, but I don't play any instruments.
Perfect. At the very least, if you do come, I think I'm like, John, this place is going to be so packed because people are going to drive up. People are going to head out. I mean, it's downtown Nashville.
Yeah. And which is already on a Saturday.
Mm. But John Rich is announcing on the show he is going to be there. Yeah. So like, yo.
John Rich of Big and Rich.
Yeah. I'm
if
like,
you don't know who I'm talking about.
I'm like, don't look at me. I'm like, you're telling people you're doing a show. People are going to show up. It's going to be crazy. And he's like, yeah, of course. It's always packed. And I'm like, all right, man. I think we're going to need, like, the car pulled around back because we got a hard stop. We got to get on the road. We've got missions to accomplish. All right. Ben says, great video this morning, Tim. Quote, I wake up every day and lay a brick. Great message. Bad wording.
Very bad. Yeah,
no way.
Wow. Oof,
no,
yikes.
Brick laying. I'm totally fine with it. In fact, if it made people laugh, all the better.
It's memorable.
Every day I wake up, I lay a brick. Mm-hmm. What is that? Like?
Pooping?
Like, yep. I poop a brick.
That's
brick.
Also good yep. for you.
Works yep. for me. My body is a machine. And it cranks out large rectangular bricks. And then I take it and I go, this is mine. And I slam it onto the building that I'm making. And
magical.
There
you go.
Every day.
Shit house.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every day you add a brick. Every day you add a brick.
I love this.
And what that means is, you know, where we are now with this crazy fifth wheel trailer in the Daily Wire parking lot doing shows with, you know, these guests. It's not like one day I woke up and I wrote down, here's how you do all of this thing. It was like every day I was just like, I will place this brick right here on this building. And one day you look, you take a step back 20 feet and you're like, this thing's huge. It just happens one step at a time. Christina H says, Miss Cooper, I love your show. Happy Friday, cast. Have fun tomorrow. We will. We're going to be driving a lot.
Oh, yeah. Good times.
JDC Gaming says there are only 31 possible plots that have ever been created for movies, and I kind of feel like that's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a villain's journey? Cause you know
yeah.
that. Is
there? There is. Yeah.
Well, probably. There's the hero's journey, which is the famous, you know, story map architecture. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's a villain's journey.
I think the whole Megamind thing. Maybe I don't want to be the bad guy anymore.
No, that's a hero's journey.
There's
you think
one.
So? Well,
in,
because
it's
he's
ish.
A villain turning into a hero.
Yeah, it's just he's still a hero. But.
Yeah.
The Watchmen, the cartoon that's played throughout the movie, the guy on the pirate ship. Do you remember this cartoon? It's incredible.
Yeah,
and he, I'll tell the story, I guess.
Yeah.
He's trying to get back home. His ship is raided by pirates and everyone is killed except for him. And he's on a lifeboat trying to get back to his wife and family, but he knows that these pirates are going to kill them. So he spends just weeks paddling to get there. His crew is rotting, starts to rot, and then he starts to hallucinate and they come alive and they're like, you did this to me. And he's losing his mind. He finally gets back and he's this wild animal looking to kill these pirates. And the town is crazy. And in the shadows, he sees one of them and he kills him. And it turns out the pirate he killed was actually his wife.
Oh, my.
He became the demon that he sought to destroy.
Hmm.
I like Mr. Freeze better. You know Mr. Freeze's story?
Mm-mm.
You're young, so I get to tell you. you know, most comic book villains were like, I'm going to take over the world. But Mr. Freeze, in the Batman animated series, his wife was terminally ill.
Mm-hmm.
So he was siphoning funds from the corporation he worked at to work on research to save her life while keeping her frozen so that she wouldn't die. And when the boss finds out, he comes in and he's like, this is what you've been doing with my money. Shut it down. He's like, no, you'll kill Nora. And then he gets hit with all these chemicals, becomes Mr. Freeze, and then he becomes a villain. His motivation is he's trying to save his wife.
So mania, it's obsessive love. It's a type of love that can twist people.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just love. It's like a guy who is willing to do whatever he has to save his wife at the expense of others.
The Greeks have derived 8 types of love. One of them is mania, and that means obsessive love. There's like eros, which is erotic love. There's pragma, which is like pragmatic love. Like
phileo, brotherly love.
No. It's Mr. Freeze. It was just romantic love.
And
the reason he's a good villain, it's because it's love and loyalty, but selfishness. That he didn't care who he hurt. He was creating the same problem. The people he hurt when he was trying to save his wife are experiencing the same pain that he's experiencing, but he doesn't care. So it's narcissism and romantic love. But it was brilliant. I think they won an Emmy for it. Mm. Love it. All right. Let's grab a couple more super chats as we go through. We got time for a couple more. John Smith says, haven't used Reddit since they banned the Donald. It was basically them outright admitting they were absolutely partisan. It's no longer a place to share content. It's a place to spread propaganda. Yeah, I go on Reddit all the time. And when I see these people be like, social media isn't biased. What they're just trying to do is shut up. Huh. You go on Reddit, and it's like, there was 2 subreddits hit the top of all from me saying I went to a diner and I didn't want to wait because they sat someone in front of me. And it was like the right can't meme posted it. And I'm like, what is me telling a story about not waiting at a diner, which was me intentionally telling a story about me being disagreeable and kind of annoying sometimes, have to do with right wing politics at all? But that's what you get when you go on Reddit. Rarely do you see anything that is against the establishment. It's always, sometimes you'll see r/conservative make it up there. But right now it's like Elon Musk wants to buy Twitter. Every comment is, oh, this is bad and wrong. Every story is Elon is a goblin. Yeah. Mm. Elon's great. We love what he's doing. All right. We got room for a couple more. Babic says, hi, I sent an email to Spin the UFO. Please check it out. Also, how can I pitch my tech company idea to take over big tech to the Daily Wire? Is there an email? I don't know if Brett has the answers to those questions.
Oh, yeah, you know me and all my powerful
indeed,
knowledge
yes.
as the casting director.
Yes, that's true.
All right. TXP says, my 17-year-old daughter just told me she wished technology would go away. I told her about EMP.
Mm.
Well, there you go.
Perfect.
Right on. All right. Zombie Lord says, the villain story is the Greek story of physis-this?
Physis-this.
Physis this?
Interesting. Oh, okay.
Where, or is it physis this? Whatever. Where the main is forced to roll a boulder up a hill for it to fall to the bottom in a cycle.
It's Sisyphus, isn't it?
Oh yeah, Sisyphus.
Oh yeah, what they wrote is physis this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sisyphus.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was pushing up the boulder, but he couldn't.
Interesting.
Only to fall to the bottom of a cycle, one can only work for the power they can have. Absolutely. Mm. All right, we'll grab this. We'll grab this one here. Brenton Connor says, Ghost in the Shell freaks me out about Neuralink.
Mm.
Ghost in the Shell is legit. Mm-hmm. Good show. You've seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're interested in metaverse stuff, just check it out. It's in the future, people have like prosthetic bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So their brain or ghost is put into a different body, or they get like prosthetic eyes and all this weird stuff. Cool stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday night in Nashville. We're going to go party. If you haven't already, smash that like button. Smash it for Ian.
Crush it. Don't be afraid of technology. It's neutral. Just use it properly.
Well,
make sure. Go tickle it.
Or tickle it.
Tickle, some tickle, yeah. Tickle the like button ever press so gently.
It, yes.
And
foreplay is okay.
Oh my gosh.
It is Friday night. Head over to
my friends. Agape.
Head over to timcast.com. Become a member. Support our work. You guys are the lifeblood of the company, and we are only able to do this because of all of you who sign up and enjoy our members-only content Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m., so we really do appreciate it. You can follow the show at TimCastIRL. We have reels on Instagram, so you can catch short clips throughout your day. You can follow me at TimCast. I guess if you want to see weird things on Twitter and me talking nonsense, it's a lot of fun. Brett, you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, you can go subscribe to the comments section. We do it every day, 5 days a week. It's
scary.
A good time. I know. I go through the comment section so you don't have to. It's really benevolent of me, honestly.
Wow, thank you very much. What's your social media?
I'm Brett Cooper on everything.
All right.
Yeah.
Ben.
Yeah, go to benjosephstewart.com. That's where you can find all my work. I'm doing a lot of documentaries lately and pushing the envelope of conscious media.
Well, Ian Crossland, happy to see you guys. This was a fantastic week in Nashville. Brett, thanks for having us to the Daily Wire. I appreciate
happy to have you.
You putting it together for us and everything as the head of production or whatever you're
doing. Obviously.
But really, this has been a spectacular opportunity. And I'm so glad. Tim, thanks for having me. And
yeah, of
this
course.
Is just great, you guys. So thanks for being here with us. And I will see you guys next week.
Yeah, this week was absolutely an adventure. Thank you guys, everyone, for tuning in as we mashed it up with the Daily Wire. That was a freaking blast. I really hope that we can do this again. It was a great time. Met some great people, learned some cool new stuff, and did some interesting technological things. So hopefully we can just go further next time. I'm stoked. Anyway, you guys can follow me on Twitter, minds.com at Sarah Patchlitz, or at sarahpatchlitz.me.
Ladies and gentlemen, just the other day, Chicken City generated $1,495. So head over to youtube.com/chickencity or chickencitylive.com. We are going to make gag short cartoons that are family friendly. I know we made a not family friendly one, but apparently I can't upload that anyway.
Oh,
and we are working on a plan for a terrestrial television commercial that I would love to get on Tucker Carlson. And so Chicken City's been a great success. It's a relaxing show where you watch chickens make chicken sounds. And you can check that out while we're off hanging out for the weekend at youtube.com/chickencity. Thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you all next time.
Bye, guys.